superstars who drew number one and number two will start the match. The last man in the ring will be declared the Royal Rumble winner and will advance to the main event at WrestleMania.
I won the Royal Rumble match, earned the right to main event WrestleMania, and you're just going to take that away from me?
I lie!
Well, there have been very few casket matches in the history of WWE, and we're going to have one here tonight on Thursday Night SmackDown. Daniel Bryan and Kane will end their rivalry once and for all.
I got a lot of emails asking about your opinion of CM Punk. I've never had a beef with him. I never have. We did this storyline and the Nash was brought in and it was done for the right reasons, right? I think it was done to get him more over, but...
I lie!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Lies, lies everywhere. This is episode 368 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off podcast here for Sunday, February 8th, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. So how about them Patriots, huh? Patriots by four in the Super Bowl. Not a bad prediction. But a hell of a game. I still think WWE, though, you know, I said this on Twitter, they should have paid the money. I know it's a lot of money, but they should have paid the money to advertise their network during the Super Bowl, especially with this free February promotion they have going on. And maybe in the ad use some nostalgia that lapsed fans, older fans would recognize. And you want to lure those people back, all the classic content you got on that network. You know, you can have, like, Hulk Hogan or the Macho Man Randy Savage. Just take a bunch of Randy Savage promos, some of the wackier, zanier Randy Savage promos out there, and just air them as part of, like, a funny commercial. You know, go for the comedy aspect or something. I just think it would have been one of the most talked-about commercials coming out of the Super Bowl. And as important as this network is to them, they have this free promotion that apparently, you know, was a home run for them in November. They're trying to get as many people as possible before WrestleMania now to sign up. You know what? $3 million? Is it worth it? I don't know. You're staking the future of your company on this thing. I would think it's worth it. Thank you to everybody who continues to sign up for a free Audible trial using our URL. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster is our custom URL. Punch that in. It'll take you to the main page on audible.com. From there, if you end up signing up for the free 30-day trial, you get one free audio book that you get to cash in courtesy of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. It could be any book that they have available of any kind, whatever floats your boat, whatever you're into. Cash in your free audio book right now. audibletrial.com/Solomonster is the URL to use for that. You can also make a PayPal donation directly to the show on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname like these fine folks. Craig Pitbull Brown, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, Tori All I Do Is Win Johansson, Ladies Man Levi Daly, The Reflection of Perfection Abraham Lara, Just Try Me Travis McCoy, Rob Bigfoot Sutter, Radiant Ray Wrighton, The Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra, David Wild West, American Dragon Daniel Bryan, yes, that is the name they used, Luis the Bodyguard Garcia, Stephen Wrecking Ball Robinson, El Fantastico Ray Fernandez, Llewellyn Go Big or Go Home Gomez, The Lady Killer Chris Osorio, Playmaker Paul Wilson, Magnificent Michael Ramo, Light 'em Up Lamont Ambler, thank you for the double, my friend, Michael the Fighter Falcinelli, Neon Rage, Nico Gottschalk, The Bishop, Edward Barber, and Nathan Monday Night Raleigh. Thank you. That's a Royal Rumble roster right there. We'll have to have like a tournament one of these days with all the different PayPal nicknames that we've got going on here. Whole roster of talent. So Thank you again to everybody who made a donation. That is, as always, the most direct, easiest way to make a contribution of some kind to the show and support the Sound Off. So you can do so on thesolemonster.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can also buy a shirt in our store, prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff. We've now got 17 different shirts up in the store for you to choose from. We have the No Distraction Roll-Ups tee, trying to start a movement here. So you can wear those shirts to the show, so you can pick that up. But we also have a brand new shirt that went up this week, both in white and black. So you could take your pick, whatever color shirt you prefer. A brand new special Sound Off logo in the vein of my favorite New York sports team. And I think this is really cool, and I want to give a lot of credit to Justin, who I know is listening, and he put that design together. He's a very talented guy. And as somebody who grew up a New York Mets fan from the young age of probably about four, through all the heartache and all the despair that team has caused me over the years, I've still been a Mets fan since I was a kid. So to see the Sound Off represented that way, plus the colors and just the logo itself looks badass on a white shirt or a black shirt. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolemonsterSoundsOff is the place to go. They ship all over the world internationally. They accept credit card and PayPal as payment. And as I say every week, when you get your shirts in the mail, a lot of you guys already do this, some of you don't. Send me a photo. Tweet me a photo of you wearing the shirt, and I'll be more than happy to retweet it and share it with everybody else out there. I always get a kick out of it when people send those photos in. We are going to start here with the Stone Cold podcast with Triple H that was conducted after Raw went off the air this past Monday night. What a surreal conversation. That was running through my mind the entire time. And if you remember the Triple H that we saw on the original season of Tough Enough and the stories about how he hated that show. I remember reading those stories about how much he despised the original Tough Enough because of how it exposed the business. And here he is on their own network all these years later talking about baby faces and heels, the writers, giving guys the push, dirt sheets, smart marks. You know, it's pretty incredible to see where we've come from just in the last 15 years. I came away from this thinking three things. Number one, everything bad or questionable, blame Vince, not me. Number two, never have I heard someone say so much, yet say so little. Which is not to say that I didn't enjoy it. I did. It's always fun to watch these things. I thought it was a good interview, and he made some interesting points that we'll get into here. But there are times where it sounded as though he was just talking as a way to kill time or avoid actually answering the question. And number three, my final takeaway from this when it was over, Triple H is really stuck, I think, in a lot of ways, until Vince steps aside. I really do think that there are things he would like to do that he is unable to do because he is not in a position to do it so long as Vince is around and Vince has final say on everything. He is still the ultimate voice. So when Vince goes, I think there will be some changes that are made. The question is, how big are those changes going to be? I don't foresee Vince, let's say, stepping aside or croaking or whatever, and Triple H and Stephanie now ascend to the throne and everything changes overnight. I don't think that's going to happen at all. But I don't doubt there are some big changes that will happen. How big they will be, though, I think is what we're all wondering. So, did he ask my three questions? I had three questions on the Sound Off last week that I said Triple H must be asked by Stone Cold Steve Austin. Were they asked? Well, Austin did ask him about NXT. In fact, right out of the gate, he mentioned NXT, and then they kind of circled back to it. He did not, however, ask Triple H how he felt about guys that have made it from the main or to the main roster from NXT and have floundered, and there have been a lot, unfortunately. He didn't ask him about that. I would have been very curious because NXT is Triple H's baby in a lot of ways. He wants to see those people succeed. He invests a lot of his own time and energy, I think, into helping them grow and get over and to see them. Not everybody is going to succeed. A guy like an Adam Rose can go either way. Adam Rose was almost like a cult figure at NXT in front of that small crowd and his entrance and his music and everything, and then it just never worked out once he got made, you know, promoted to the main roster. Now, can you just blame that on Vince McMahon and the writers, or was the Adam Rose character just never going to get over in front of a more mainstream audience, right? I could see that. I could see where maybe he just wasn't going to get over at that same level no matter what. But you can't tell me that other people like Emma, for example, who have all the talent in the world, could not be and should not be doing better than they are right now. And a lot of that has to do with Vince McMahon and his merry band of writers over there. I mean, that's just the reality of it. How does Triple H feel about that? That would have been an interesting question, I think, for Austin to ask. He didn't ask the question about Kurt Angle. I didn't think he would. And it's not really important in the grand scheme of things. You know, Kurt's back with TNA. But I just would have been very curious to get his take on, you know, what sort of issues, if any, he has or has had in the past with Kurt. And if he can verify what Kurt said as far as the conversations that were had when he was looking to come back recently to WWE and it didn't work out. So he didn't ask that. The third question, though, was his direct involvement in the booking of the Royal Rumble match, if he had any at all. How does he justify that? You know, I think that was something to the effect of what I was hoping he would ask. He didn't ask that, but Triple H did say during the interview that the final decision was debated back and forth a lot, and ultimately it was Vince McMahon's call. So there you go again, right? Vince. It's all Vince. It's Vince's call. And we already knew that. Again, of course it's Vince's call. Everything that makes television is ultimately Vince's call. So he kind of passed the buck on that a little bit. He didn't really shed a lot of light on his involvement in the process or the planning, if any, of the Rumble match itself, but he kind of passed the buck on that question. Austin opened with a statement that kayfabe has died. So Austin, I think, is about 10 or 15 years late to the game on that one. But still very weird to just open an interview on the WWE Network with Steve Austin, right? One of the biggest stars in the business ever. Kayfabe has died. And then it just kind of goes into a whole conversation with him and Triple H about how kayfabe is a thing of the past and you pull the curtain back too much and it's just a different business now. So they had a lengthy discussion about that. Then they got into Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan. And they spent a lot of time talking about Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns, the reactions, everything that's been going on recently. Does Roman Reigns deserve it? Is he being picked on unfairly? All these different things. Triple H made it a point to say that Roman Reigns gets booed on television. Not by everybody, to be fair to Roman Reigns, but he does get booed by a lot of people at the TV shows. But Triple H says he gets nothing but cheers at the live events, which I also find hard to believe. I do believe that he gets a majority positive reaction at the house shows. And there are people who will send in house show reports who will go and will say Roman Reigns got cheered by everybody, John Cena got cheered by everybody. I mean, I've seen that myself. I've seen it at Madison Square Garden. I've been to house shows before. I was at one of the house shows the day after Christmas. It's become like a tradition at MSG. And this is probably about 2 years ago now. And John Cena came out at the end of the show, I think, for a cage match with Dolph Ziggler, who had Big E and AJ in his corner at the time. This would have been after the TLC pay-per-view, where Ziggler beat Cena. Cena came out, and the place went crazy. It was mostly kids. It was mostly kids and women, which is not to say all the men were booing him, but when he came out, I would say the reaction was anywhere from 90 to 95% positive, the complete opposite of what you'll see on television. So I don't think Triple H was lying when he said that, but it's just interesting that they kind of throw that, oh yeah, well, at the live events, Roman Reigns gets cheered by almost everybody. It's probably families and kids, and that's just how it's going to be. I mean, in a lot of ways, I guess Roman Reigns is already on his way to being John Cena 2.0, right? He gets booed on TV and cheered at the live events. I don't know that they should really be all that excited about having John Cena 2.0 for the next 10 years. You know, you should want somebody that everybody can get behind and cheer for if he's going to be your guy, if he's going to be your top babyface. And I don't know, there's a lot of signs there right now between the promos he was doing over the last few weeks, getting those types of reactions. It's just eerily similar to John Cena. I just don't think that's a good thing. I don't think Roman Reigns should be like John Cena. I just don't think he should. Austin made a comment that he felt the finish of the Royal Rumble could have been booked differently to make Roman Reigns look like he earned it more. Maybe that has a lot to do with the backlash that he's gotten. And that's a fair point. Roman Reigns, when you really stop and think about it, didn't really do much of anything in the Royal Rumble. I know he did dump some guys out of the ring. His real star-making performance in the Rumble was last year when he set the elimination record. He came in at, what, number 19 this year and spent most of the time laying on the floor, you know, in the corner. He didn't really do much of anything. And so there was a little bit of that, I think, in that people felt like he won the Rumble, but what the hell did he do? You know, there were other people like Bray Wyatt who it just felt like did more in the Rumble match, and so that may have been part of why people turned on him. But there was a lot of talk, like I said, about Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan and the fan reactions to them and all these sorts of things. And as they went on and on and on, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, you guys only have an hour here. I know this is really relevant, but you've now spent the first 10 or 15 minutes talking about this. Can we please move on? As they're going on about this stuff, a thought occurred to me. And I'm sitting there and I think to myself, all this talk about the guy, right? That was what this conversation was about. Who's going to be the guy in WWE? Is Roman Reigns going to be the guy? Is that why fans resent him? They want Daniel Bryan to be the guy. And I'm thinking to myself, why does WWE even need the guy? Why can't there be two or three guys? Why does there have to be just one? They're always so obsessed over one guy. It's like that storyline they did on television last year, or maybe it was the end of 2013 with Orton and Bryan. Who is the face of WWE? Who cares who the face of WWE is, at least in terms of the storyline? Who gives a shit? Why should I care? Why should you care? Watching a television show, who do I care is the face of the company? That was a completely dumb storyline to begin with. You know, when Stone Cold Steve Austin was on top, and you had Rock right there with him as the top babyface, and you had Mankind and Triple H, it's like, were they fighting on television every week to see who the face of WWE was? No. What a concept. They were fighting over a championship. I know, that's so old school of me to bring that up. But they were. It wasn't about who the face of the company was. Who's going to be on the fucking Chef Boyardee can. It was real men fighting over things that mattered. And I think now there's this perception that we're not dealing with real men. We're dealing with guys that are kind of masquerading around as pro wrestlers, fighting over meaningless bullshit that nobody cares about. That, I think, is one of the biggest problems in WWE right now. But even behind the scenes, you know, I think they just rely way too much on building everything, that whole company, around one guy. I think that's dangerous. How many times have we said over the years, if, God forbid, John Cena were to be hit by a car, or a plane went down, or there was some horrible accident that took him out of WWE, what would they do? There were many points over the last 5, 6, 7 years where the roster was very thin, everything was built around John Cena, and if one thing happened to this guy, they were fucked because they didn't have anybody who was even close to the kind of star that he was. Why would you even put yourselves in that position? Why wouldn't you try to build a second guy and maybe a third guy to be on that same level? Why does it have to be about just one person? I think that's flawed. I think that's a big mistake. And I think they spend so much time obsessing over it. Roman Reigns has the look. He's a big guy with a big tribal tattoo and great hair. And, you know, he's got a great spear. Oh, this guy, we can build everything. We can build the kingdom around this guy. But wouldn't it make more sense to not just build Roman Reigns up at that level, but build Dean Ambrose at that level? Or build Daniel Bryan at that level, since the fans were already ready to embrace him anyway? That way you don't have to build the whole company around just, you know, old goat-faced Daniel Bryan. You could build it around Bryan and Reigns and maybe one other person. And rotate them out, you know, depending on the storyline each week and each month as far as who you want to put the spotlight on. I think that would make more sense. So they went on in the interview. Triple H buried all of their older production guys at one point. It was hilarious. He was talking about NXT and how they train more than just wrestlers. They're training the next generation of producers and production people behind the scenes, and how, you know, he was looking off camera, pointing at all, I guess, the old production people that were in the studio that we couldn't see, and he was saying, all these old guys, they're going to be, you know, replaced by the younger guys soon. And that was, I think, the first little dig there at Kevin Dunn. Would not be the last. And then we got into the China debate. And this is what I want to spend some time on here, because there's been a lot made of the comments that Triple H made about China. Steve Austin asked him if China deserves to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. And Triple H said, absolutely. Unequivocally, does she deserve it? Absolutely. And he says he's got no beef with her. Things happened, he said. And then he went into this weird deal where, without actually coming out directly and saying so, he seemed to imply that it would be difficult for them to put her into the Hall of Fame because of her past in porn. Because China has done hardcore porn. She's posed nude, she's done movies before. And so he's suggesting that, he actually said, if, let's say, I have an 8-year-old kid, and that 8-year-old kid hops on Google to learn more about who China is, we can't have that, because God only knows what that 8-year-old kid is going to find. That was his argument. Let's start with this question of, does she deserve to go in? It's hard to sit here and talk about who deserves to go into the WWE Hall of Fame with a straight face, because the process by which these decisions are made is a joke. And I spent a lot of time answering a mailbag question about this recently, so go back a few weeks in the archives, because I'm not going to rehash that whole thing again. But yes, China deserves to be recognized, and I'll tell you why. I see people saying yes or no, but not really offering any real substance as to why. I'll tell you exactly why China belongs in the Hall of Fame. And I'm going to actually make a comparison. And please don't tar and feather me for this, because this is going to sound weird, but just bear with me here, okay? I'm going to make a comparison between China and Miss Elizabeth. Probably the only time I will ever make a comparison of any kind between China and Miss Elizabeth. But I make the comparison because with Randy Savage, when he came into WWE, he came in with Elizabeth as his manager. They built him up like a big deal. Every manager was clamoring for him, and in the end, out came Miss Elizabeth, who we had never seen before. She was this beautiful, gorgeous woman. You couldn't take your eyes off her. I mean, she was my first crush in wrestling, was Miss Elizabeth. Just the picture of class this woman was on television. And Elizabeth was a very big part of that act with Randy Savage. So much so that I can sit here right now and ask the question, would Randy Savage have gotten over to the level that he got over at without Miss Elizabeth, without her being in his corner, without her being part of that package? Now, I think Savage would have gone on, no matter what, to become a big star, probably a world champion at some point, whether it's just in WCW and not WWE, or maybe both, okay? He would have gone on to become a big star no matter what, because he was that damn good, okay? One of the best ever. He is exactly the picture of what a professional wrestler should be. In the ring, he could back it up. Out of the ring, he was even better. There was nobody else like him. He was such a unique character. He fit in perfectly in that era. So I personally think that Randy Savage would have been a big star. I mean, a big, big star, no matter what. That's my opinion, okay? But do we know for sure that he would have become WWF champion when he did? Remember, he became the WWF champion because Hulk Hogan was going to go away. He was filming a movie for a few months. I think it might have been No Holds Barred. They had to get the title off of him. And they came up with this great plan, this great storyline, my favorite storyline of all time, the whole Mega Powers storyline and the eventual split. It was all built around jealousy. Jealousy that Savage had because he perceived that Hogan was lusting for Elizabeth. He was lusting over the man's wife. The most cardinal sin you could think of. That whole thing was built around her. It was not built around Hogan and Savage. It was built around her. And I'm sure Hogan was fine with it because he knew he was going to get the belt back as soon as he came back, if the following year. And they had this story in place. You take Elizabeth out of the equation, that changes everything. That changes everything. Who knows if things play out the exact same way with Savage getting the title when he did and eventually feuding with Hogan. That's the sort of thing, it's a what-if question, you don't know for sure, but that could have changed the whole trajectory of this guy's career. Maybe he ends up being a big star, but not quite as big. Maybe he never wins the WWF title. Because even the second time that Savage won the championship, when he feuded with Flair in 1992, that whole storyline was built around Elizabeth. And the phony photos that got published in the magazine of Ric Flair with Elizabeth. Remember, she was mine before she was yours. And then even at WrestleMania, when the match is over and Flair kisses her and Savage goes crazy. The two key storylines of this guy's career in WWF were built around Elizabeth. You take her out of the equation, who knows? Who knows where Randy Savage ends up in the pecking order there? And then eventually, going to WCW where he was again reunited with Elizabeth after a while. That's how important a part of his career that she was. But I look at that and say Savage would have been a big star no matter what, okay? Why am I bringing all of this up? I know I'm taking a while to get to the point. I bring this up because I make the same comparison for China and Triple H. In that, without her, without China, I'm not so sure Triple H gets the chance to get over at the level that he ended up being at and then eventually marrying into the company. I'm really not. And this applies more to China and Triple H than it does for Savage and Liz, because I still think Savage, like I said, would have ended up on top. I feel less confident about that when it comes to China and Triple H. That's how important China was to this guy's career. Okay, and you look at Triple H's career from the time he came into WWE until today. Triple H was never over enough on his own to make it, at least in the company's eyes. And the proof is right there in front of your face. You don't have to take my word for it. Just look at the body of this guy's career from the moment he came in until today. Now, when he came in, it was in 95. He was a mid-card. He was a mid-to-lower-card guy. You know, he was a good worker. He was not pushed as anything special. He probably lost more than he won. He was just a guy on the roster with a shitty gimmick. That's what he was. Fast forward to the end of 96 when they put the Intercontinental title on him. They put the title on him the same night they linked him up with Mr. Perfect. Remember, they did that whole swerve where they were building tension between them and there was supposed to be a match on Raw. It was going to be Mr. Perfect's first match in years, and it ended up being a big swerve, and Perfect helped him win the title, and the idea was that Perfect was going to be this guy's manager and help get him over. Well, it didn't quite work out that way because Perfect was almost instantly out of the company after a contractual disagreement. He ended up going to WCW many, many months later. So he was gone. But they linked the two of them up with the hope that it would help get Triple H over. So when Hennig went away, their next great plan was to put Curtis Hughes with Triple H. Mr. Hughes, for a cup of coffee there, people probably barely remember it, was actually Triple H's bodyguard. And I know he's, maybe even on his DVD, he talked about that and said Curtis is a nice guy, but this was not an idea that Triple H endorsed. He didn't like it. He didn't think it would work. And it didn't. It ended as quickly as it began, okay? But they felt they had to put somebody with him. So in the span of just, what, 3-4 months, he went from having Mr. Perfect in his corner to Mr. Hughes, and the month after that, China debuted. And they finally found something that worked. And then you fast forward later in 1997, Triple H is glomming off HBK as part of DX. Thank God he was best buds with Shawn Michaels, because God only knows where this guy would have ended up if he wasn't buddy-buddy with HBK. So because of that friendship, you know, it benefited him. They started the DX faction. That went on for a while. When Shawn went away, Triple H took over as the leader of DX. Fast forward a little bit more, and he's with Stephanie McMahon. They do that whole storyline. Now he's got Stephanie with him. And the whole McMahon-Helmsley regime. And then it became Triple H and Ric Flair. A few years later, they put Ric Flair in Triple H's corner. He had to be with somebody or surrounded by other people, be it China, DX with X-Pac and the Outlaws, the corporation, the corporate ministry, the McMahon-Helmsley regime, the two-man power trip. Which, with The Rock leaving, he was going to go film a movie after WrestleMania 17. Really should have been Triple H's face turn, which they teased, and he ended up not turning face. They actually put him together as partners with Steve Austin instead. It should have been a babyface turn for Triple H with him feuding with a heel Austin after WrestleMania and letting that carry them for a few months. But instead, they made them partners. Triple H now is with Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's not against him. And then, of course, Triple H got hurt, came back 8 months later. And yeah, you know, he got a monster reaction in Madison Square Garden. I would hope so, given the fact that the guy was gone for so long. And he had the great comeback story. He won the Royal Rumble match. He beat Chris Jericho for the title of WrestleMania. And then what happened? A month later, they took the title off him and put it on Hulk Hogan. Now, Hogan was on the nostalgia trip at that point. He had just come back to WWE. He was gone for like 9 years. The fans turned him babyface. I guarantee you, if that were Steve Austin, after having just won the title of WrestleMania, there's no way they would have taken that title off of him to put it on Hulk Hogan. Not a chance. But Triple H, on his own as a babyface at that point, was a bust. Nobody cared. There was nothing there. He was dull. He was boring. Why do you think they had to constantly put people with him and surround him by other people? or surround himself with other people. I'm sure he had some influence in those decisions. Because he knew. He knew. They thought going with Hogan might be better for business short term. It wasn't. They took the title right off of him, put it on Undertaker. But that just goes to show you how well Triple H has done on his own. Back when he was in his prime wrestling full time. Thankfully for him, his buddy came back, right? Shawn came back in 2002. He had that feud going into SummerSlam. And then what happened after SummerSlam? They gave him his own belt, and they put Ric Flair with him like a month later. And Flair spent years with him. And if you're not over with Ric Flair in your corner, then there's a problem. Then came Evolution, where the goal was to help get some new guys over. Don't think for a second, though, that Triple H didn't know that surrounding himself with these guys and putting himself right in the middle as their leader was also going to benefit him. Of course it was. And it worked. It definitely worked. People look back very fondly on Evolution. They made stars out of Batista and Randy Orton. It was a success. But yet again, Triple H surrounding himself with other people. And when that ran its course, and a little more time went by, then it was a DX reunion. Bring back DX with Shawn Michaels. And they did that for a few years. And then by that point, he was winding down. You know, he was a made man at that point anyway. He was wrestling less and less. But you look at his body of work, you see a pattern. And it all goes back to China. Because every association before her was a failure. Until she came along and she changed everything. I mean, that woman was a freak of nature. And I got news for you. She was more over for a long time than Triple H was. She was the real draw, not Triple H. For years, nobody cared about Triple H. They wanted to see China. They wanted to see China beat up some dudes. She was a star before he ever was. And so without her, again, it's impossible to say, but more so than with Randy Savage and Elizabeth, without China, there's a good chance Triple H doesn't end up in the spot that he's in right now. Maybe he does because he was still friends with Shawn Michaels. You know, he still had that connection, so maybe he does. But maybe he's not quite where he is now, quite, you know, in the cushy spot that he finds himself in right now. Maybe he still ends up a big star, but not the kind of decorated champion that he ended up being in WWE. For that reason alone, the woman deserves a spot in the Hall of Fame. Not for being the first female Intercontinental Champion, which was the start of the decline for that title, by the way. You know, when she won it and they did the whole co-champion deal with Chris Jericho, that was the start of it. You know, and Jericho and Benoit and Eddie and those guys, they helped kind of bring value back to the title after that. But I don't think the Intercontinental title was ever really looked at the same after China won it. But that's not why she belongs in the Hall of Fame. She belongs in the Hall of Fame because she played an instrumental role, as instrumental a role as anybody I can think of, in Triple H even being on a podcast with Stone Cold Steve Austin talking about this stuff. And look at where Triple H is. He's the heir apparent to the throne. He's a pretty important guy. There is no other reason that you can offer besides that one as the best evidence of why this woman deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. There it is. Now, the porn stuff and kids Googling her, to me, that's a cop-out answer, okay? If they don't want to employ her now and, like, put her under contract today because of her past in porn, that's one thing. But to honor her for her past contributions to the company before that, before she even did any of that stuff, when you have somebody, for example, like Jimmy Snuka in the Hall of Fame, yes, Jimmy Snuka was never convicted in a court of law. I don't even think he was ever indicted. Most people believe, as I do, that Jimmy Snuka murdered, be it accidentally or on purpose, he murdered his girlfriend. And not after his career had already ended. This was in the prime of his career. This was like 1982, I think, 82, 83, around then. This is the prime of this guy's career. If we're going to go down that slippery slope and start getting into the act of Googling people in the Hall of Fame, imagine the stuff that kids are going to find out about Scott Hall or Jake the Snake Roberts. Holy shit, think of all the things that guy has done over the years, and he's been pretty open about it. It's not very hard to do a Google search on Jake Roberts and come up with all these interviews, all of this really deep, dark shit that this guy has been very open about. It's scary stuff. What 8-year-old is Googling China anyway? What 8-year-old is sitting around Googling the members of the Hall of Fame? If they're old enough to read, I think it would be far scarier to them to read some of the stuff Jake Roberts has done and said about himself over the years than it would be to see a naked picture or a porn video with China in it. Which brings me to Sunny. I see people mentioning the fact that Sunny is now selling herself on Skype. And so therefore, how hypocritical of Triple H and WWE to suggest that China does not belong in the Hall of Fame because people may Google her. Sunny was not, as best as we know, who the hell knows, she wasn't selling herself on Skype in 2011 when she went into the Hall of Fame. She was already in the Hall of Fame long before she started doing that. Here's the reason why the answer that Triple H gave was such bullshit. It's a little thing called Wrestling Vixens. Okay, V-I-triple-X-E-N-S. That should give you a sense of what this is about and what road I'm going down here. Okay, Wrestling Vixens. It was a website that Missy Hyatt started. This would have been around, I think, the mid-2000s, long before Sunny ever went into the Hall of Fame. And on this Wrestling Vixens website, Sunny posed for tons of nude photographs, a lot of which are still online. You could find them right now. Not only that, I'm pretty sure there were videos, too. I vividly remember there being one video of Sunny totally nude with Missy Hyatt in a shower pouring milk all over their bodies. It's no wonder I became lactose intolerant. I came across this accidentally at the time. Of course, it was accidental. But no, this really existed. I don't know if the milk video is still out there. But go Google Tammy Sitch nude and tell me what comes up. You'll get tons of naked pictures of her. And yes, it's not as explicit as hardcore porn. But so what? You're still showing your tits and your ass for money. I mean, where do you draw the line on this? If your argument is we don't want young children to Google these people and see bad things, you would disqualify an awful lot of people from the Hall of Fame. I love how now WWE is this picture of class and respect. You know, such a classy organization all of a sudden they want to kind of build themselves up as. This is the same company that made millions of dollars selling basically their own version of softcore pornography in the late 90s and the early 2000s. I remember being in high school. I couldn't wait to get my hands on those Raw magazines with Sunny on the cover. She was practically naked in some of those photos. You had Marlena with her big fake boobs hanging out, Sable with nothing but a chain covering her breasts, doing Playboy for WWE. So did China, by the way. They made millions off selling softcore porn to kids for years. And now they're the picture of class. Why not just give the real reason why China is not going into the Hall of Fame or isn't already in the Hall of Fame? Because your wife doesn't want her in there. Plain and simple. You know, it's funny. In the interview I mentioned, Triple H said things happen with him in China. And he says, I don't really want to get into it. Of course he doesn't want to get into it because it's not going to paint the very rosy picture of Triple H or Stephanie McMahon. So let's just avoid that one altogether. That's the real reason. There's your answer. But this holier-than-thou nonsense, I don't know if he really believes that or if he's just spouting off the excuse that Vince McMahon gave to him about people Googling her, but give me a break. Once Sunny went in after the Vixen stuff, you lost that argument. So what you're saying is that penetration is the dividing line here. Sunny, no penetration. China, penetration. Is that now in the bylaws of the Hall of Fame? Thou shall not penetrate? The whole thing is just complete nonsense. That's the only reason I have a problem with it. China helped make Triple H long before Mick Foley ever did, and for that reason alone, I would put her in the Hall of Fame. And all this other noise about porn and all that kind of stuff is just that. It's just noise. And they don't have a leg to stand on when it comes to that. Stone Cold also lobbied on the podcast for Michael Hayes and the Freebirds to go into the Hall of Fame next year in Dallas. I think that would be a most appropriate place for that to happen. He asked the question to Triple H, who was more influential in the business, the NWO or DX? And Triple H hemmed and hawed, and he said, well, you know, at the beginning when they first arrived on the scene, the NWO was a big deal, they were very influential, but longer term, of course he went with DX as his answer. To me, there really is no contest here. The answer is the NWO, period. End of story. The question is, who was more influential on the business? The NWO is the only answer. Yes, it fizzled out when they added too many people to it, but the impact that that one angle had on the entire wrestling business and how it helped sway the wrestling wars and helped light a fire under WWF to be more competitive, and the even bigger example I point to, how many companies, including WWE, in the years that have passed following the NWO angle, have been trying to replicate that and copy it and try to kind of capture lightning in a bottle again, right? How many times have all of these different promotions essentially tried to have their own NWO? And by saying their own NWO, I'm not just saying anybody who ever tried to form a faction, but there were plenty of times over the years, whether it was the Nexus angle, which I thought was actually very well done, things of that nature, like an invading faction, and how many times have we seen that? And it all came from the NWO, because a lot of these guys grew up on that, right? They grew up on the NWO, you know, the performers, and even the writers and the bookers. I mean, they were around when the NWO was hot. Maybe they were even working for WCW in some cases when it was hot. And they've always tried to replicate that, and it never works. That right there should tell you how influential the NWO was. I don't see too many people copying a lot of the shit that DX did. And I'm not trying to minimize it. I enjoyed DX. I consider myself a DX fan at that time. Not the newer version. I thought that was just crap. But to compare the two and say which was more influential, I just don't see how you can say anything other than the NWO. That is the answer. Then Austin asked him about CM Punk, which I give Austin credit for. I didn't know if he was going to bring Punk up or not, but he did. And Triple H said that, and you heard the soundbite at the beginning of the podcast here. He made the comment that he had no beef with Punk. He said the storyline with Punk back in 2011 was done for the right reasons. It was done to help get him more over. That was the one point. Not that it was the only thing that he said that made me shake my head, but it was the one point in the entire podcast where I just sat there and said, "You are so full of shit. You are so full of shit." But, you know, he was being corporate H during the interview. And never say never, when Austin said, you know, would you do business with him again? Could Punk come back? And instead of saying what he probably really felt, he was like, well, you know, I know we say it on TV and it sounds cliche, but if it's best for business. So Triple H is clearly learning from Vince McMahon here. But he's full of shit. And, you know, you go back to the whole storyline in 2011, there was nobody in the summer of 2011, nobody who was hotter in pro wrestling than CM Punk. The guy was white hot. At that time, he was the hottest thing in wrestling. I mean, there was really no higher that he could ascend during those few months after he beat John Cena and won the WWE Championship. And you think back to what they did, Triple H even then was kind of, sort of, mostly retired. He was not wrestling full-time anymore. In fact, before that, I don't even know. I mean, the last match he may have had before that, and maybe I'm wrong, but it may have been the match with Undertaker or WrestleMania. I don't even know if Triple H wrestled after that until the match with Punk, which was in September at the Night of Champions pay-per-view. I know the original plan had been for Punk to first wrestle Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash got to powerbomb him 3 times on television. Punk never got his retribution on Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash had some sort of issue. He was on medication for his heart, Plavix or something, and it couldn't get cleared. Whatever the nonsense was that went on, the match never happened. I think the end goal was to do Punk and Triple H at Survivor Series. So instead, they did Punk and Triple H in September at Night of Champions. And, you know, all the defenders will say, hey, you know, he pedigreed CM Punk 3 times. It took 3 pedigrees. Some people, it only takes 1. And he beat Punk, yes, but it took 3 of them. Give me a break. He came essentially out of retirement at a time when he was already on television wearing the suit, being COO Triple H. He came out of retirement for 1 fucking match, and he beat the hottest thing in the company at that time. And then, I think, went right back into retirement until December, when he came back out to wrestle his buddy Kevin Nash, who finally was cleared, and now he was able to wrestle again. Instead of going back and doing Nash and Punk, they did Nash and Triple H, I think in a ladder match, of all things, to put Kevin Nash in. But yeah, he came essentially out of retirement, out of the doldrums, to beat the hottest thing in the company at the time. And somehow, this was all designed to help get CM Punk even more over by beating him. Now, if CM Punk was a guy that was on the ascent, a mid-card guy, maybe even like an upper mid-card guy, was never quite able to break out as a real main event star on his own, maybe you can make that argument that by working with a guy like Triple H, even if he lost, he could get the rub and become a bigger star because of it. But in this case, it doesn't apply. Punk was already a big star. He had just beaten the biggest star in the company and won the championship. CM Punk did not need Triple H, but they did what they did. And if you listen to Punk's interview with Cabana, he brought that up, even in the meeting, that final meeting he had with Vince and Triple H, and he even turned to Triple H and said, listen, I resent you for what you did in 2011. You talk about this best for business crap. That certainly was not best for business. CM Punk was never as hot after that feud with Triple H. He was still one of the biggest stars in the company. He still had a huge fan base. He won the championship back a few months later. But I don't think that CM Punk was ever nearly as hot as he was for those couple of months in 2011 before they put him in that feud with Triple H and they beat him. He was never the same after that. So I guess if their plan was to get him even more over, their plan failed. So that whole thing about Punk and how he's got no problem with Punk, and, you know, it's all nonsense. I mean, I absolutely believe the stories that when the CM Punk podcast dropped with Colt Cabana, that Triple H and Stephanie both wanted to kill him. And I'm sure they both feel the same way right now. There's still a lot of animosity there. He can say whatever the hell he wants to say. There is no way that CM Punk is going to go say the things that he said about Triple H and reveal the things that he revealed about Triple H and how he reacted in the meeting with Vince when Punk was kind of nailing him on all these different things. And that Triple H is just going to take that and be like, well, I don't know, he was kind of misunderstood. I never had a problem. I still don't have a problem with Punk. I'd love to do business with him again. Like, please, please. So that to me was like, this guy is completely full of it. They went into some word association. Triple H said that Bret Hart, fantastic technician, but sometimes takes himself too seriously. I guess that's his little receipt for the Bret Hart comment about how Triple H has never had a really great match, 4 out of 10, all that kind of stuff. And also, not for nothing, he's kind of right. Bret Hart, as much as I love Bret Hart, Bret's one of my all-time favorites, he does tend to take himself a little too seriously. Triple H said that they're talking to Brock Lesnar. Austin wanted to know what's up with Brock. He says they're talking. Whether or not he stays is up to him. He feels that Brock may have unfinished business in UFC. He didn't say UFC, but that's what he meant. And then Austin asked him about the streak, Undertaker's streak coming to an end at WrestleMania last year. Does he think the streak should have ended? And Triple H completely dodged the question. He went into this long-winded answer. I get the sense that if it were up to Triple H, that streak would not have come to an end. In fact, I'm pretty sure Triple H had done an interview. Maybe it was on like they do like an Undertaker streak DVD set or something. I vaguely remember Triple H in some sort of interview a couple years ago even saying that, like, just from a marketing perspective, it would have been complete suicide to end the streak. And I'm sure if it were up to him, it probably wouldn't have happened. But he didn't say that. So they got into a discussion then about the Super Bowl finish. Talk about surreal. Here I am watching the WWE Network, and of all people, Triple H and Steve Austin are having a discussion about the finish of the Super Bowl. And they're talking about that, and they start playing the music as though they're trying to play these guys out, like we're out of time here. And Austin's in his earpiece, oh, they're winding me down. And Triple H is like, who is it? Is it Vince? And Steve says no in his ear. He goes, it's Kevin Dunn. And Triple H basically, in so many words, said, fuck Kevin Dunn, we're going long. If you can go long with Vince, you can go long with me. And I laughed. And I've talked about this on the Sound Off before, as the stories go. Triple H and Stephanie both are not fond of Kevin Dunn. And I don't know if Kevin Dunn feels the same way about them. They are not Kevin Dunn fans. And the moment that Vince McMahon is gone, because Vince will always keep Kevin Dunn employed, the moment that Kevin Dunn, or rather Vince, is gone, Kevin Dunn is going to be gone not too long after. Because Triple H and Stephanie have been putting their people, they've been hiring their own people in various departments. You know, when the time comes, it's going to be a company full of their people. They want to run things the way that they want to run them. And it makes sense that they would bring in their own people. And Kevin Dunn has been there for so long. I mean, the guy is a fucking relic. So, you know, I absolutely believe that Triple H is not fond of Kevin Dunn. And then here we are on this podcast with him making these little comments, and you can kind of tell, it came through, that he's not exactly a Kevin Dunn fan. Austin went on for a little longer with him. He asked about promos. Is it that they don't trust talent to go out there unscripted and do promos? And Triple H basically said, yes, they have sponsors to consider, which is basically just saying we don't trust these guys to go out there and say something they shouldn't and get us in a whole bunch of trouble, so we have to script everything out. I still think that's just really, really counterproductive. There's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere, whether, again, it's bullet points or it's just less scripting. Just the way they do things now, some guys can nail it. You know, for every Dean Ambrose who seems to be able to go out there and cut a promo and not sound completely rehearsed, you've got a Roman Reigns telling a nursery rhyme story, or you've got, I'm trying to think of somebody else who's like just not a good promo on the roster right now. I mean, I think back to poor John Morrison back in the day. I still kind of rip on him. As talented as he is, he was a terrible promo in WWE, and it doesn't look like he's gotten much better, but I just think the overscripting is one of the other big things that's wrong with WWE these days. Besides the just focus so much on the guy, this is the other thing that's just killing them. It's just the overscripting of everything. Triple H said that if it were up to him, Monday Night Raw would go back to 2 hours. I was very happy to hear him say that. He says it's a Vince McMahon call, though. So there it is again. Throw Vinnie Mac under the bus. He goes, I'd go back to 2 hours in a heartbeat, but it's a Vince McMahon call. And it's a Vince McMahon call because of money, I think, more than anything else. USA Network is paying them probably quite a bit of money for that third hour. I've heard $700,000 thrown around. I don't know if that's factual or not, but it's a lot of money. At a time when they're cutting costs and they just launched a network that nearly put them into debt, so money has to be a consideration, I suppose, but God, if Raw were to go back to 2 hours, I'm not going to sit here and say that all of a sudden it would be a great show and it would solve all their problems. And I had one person on Twitter defend Raw being 3 hours by saying the show is actually much better at 3 hours, because without the 3 hours, they'd have less time to work with. You still have promos you got to do, and so therefore we wouldn't get some of the longer great wrestling matches that we've gotten. It's a fair point in this respect. I don't think that if Raw was 2 hours, we would get as many great matches as we've gotten under the three-hour model. But that's a sacrifice that just has to be made. That doesn't mean you can't have a two-hour show with some damn good wrestling matches, even if it's just the main event. Even if you don't have time to have great long matches up and down the card because you got promos and a lot of guys you got to fit in there. So you have one great match every now and then instead of having them more frequently. So what? It's just killing the show in so many other ways that I would gladly take the two-hour model back in a heartbeat. And I was happy to hear Triple H say it. He was saying it in the vein of, it's also freaking hard. It's hard to book and script a three-hour show as opposed to two every single week. So it's not just what we're seeing on television. It's just the work that goes into it, especially when you have a madman at the helm who is no different now with 3 hours than he was at two, apparently. And any given Monday afternoon, 2-3 hours before the show, he'll throw the whole script in the garbage. Now you got to rewrite an entire 3-hour show. That can't be easy. But that was one of the big revelations to come out of Triple H's mouth during the show. He says he wants more women to get more time and more dedication on television, which is something I'd like to see as well. On sports entertainment, Austin won't let this go. He hates the term sports entertainment. It was funny watching him and Vince quarrel over it when he kept saying wrestling the last time Vince was on. And Vince is like, it's not wrestling. And Steve kept catching himself. But in his head, he's like, dude, it's wrestling. So he brought that up to Triple H. And Triple H says, we call it sports entertainment because people hear pro wrestling and they don't know what that is. The funny thing about that statement, most of the time, neither does WWE. So that was the Triple H interview. It's worth it. The network is free. I can't tell you it's not worth it. It's absolutely worth it just to watch it. It's just insightful, not just to hear it. I think you got to actually watch it. Sometimes it looks like he's squirming in his chair. Other times he looks more relaxed. It's a good interview. I don't know if I enjoyed the Vince one more than this. Maybe just for the sake that we never, ever hear Vince in that kind of form. Triple H, we heard him before on Chris Jericho's podcast and stuff like that. So this was not like groundbreaking stuff the way that the Vince one kind of was. But it was still fun. And speaking of networks, by the way, New Japan World, for those of you who don't know, is also free for the month of February. They're just totally copying off of WWE's promotion. So they're giving the month of February away for free. If you haven't tried out their service yet, they have an English language sign up, I think, on there now. Go check it out. You have to give your credit card. They will charge you. But from what I'm reading, you will then be reimbursed if you cancel before the trial expires. And I think the trial goes until the 27th of this month. So I think it's njpwworld.com, whatever it is. It's New Japan World. Check it out. You get a free month, and you can sample the New Japan product if you're not familiar with it.
Now, the DistractionRollup.com counter.
Yes, there is now an official Distraction Rollup counter for those of you that are looking to keep track of all of the Distraction Rollup finishes on Monday Night Raw this year. And right now, we're just talking Monday Night Raw. We're not counting SmackDown, Main Event, the pay-per-views, for no other reason because I don't have time to catch all of those shows. So we're sticking to Monday Night Raw. We're sticking to the flagship show here. You can also feel free to use the hashtag Distraction Rollup during Raw on Monday nights. Keep that discussion going because we're always likely to have at least one every single Monday night. So you can use that. I know the website's been getting some love on Reddit. One commenter made a worthwhile suggestion, which was to include the total number of matches on Raw to date. So as time goes on, we can better judge how much of a problem it really is. And look, I don't have an agenda here. You know, I always complain about how much they overuse and abuse that finish and what a sign of lazy booking it is. So I figured, let's track it and see how bad it really is. You know, see, now there are distraction roll-ups that sometimes do make sense. We're talking about the difference between use and abuse. I don't like the abuse of it. It's just lazy. But you do have times where it makes sense, like on this show. You know, the one in the Miz Sin Cara match was acceptable because it furthered the split between Miz and Mizdow. It's their overuse of that finish that just renders them completely meaningless. So, anyway, bookmark that link, distractionrollup.com. And refer back to it each week, spread it around, retweet it, share it on Facebook, help tweet it out during Raw. I want as many people as possible to know that something like that actually does exist. And there actually is also a link to the No Distraction Roll-Ups t-shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tee store down at the bottom of the page. Raw Monday night was live from Denver, Colorado. I don't know what the hell is going on. They've booked Roman Reigns against Daniel Bryan at Fastlane for the title shot at WrestleMania. I'm sure Roman Reigns is going over, and they're not changing their plans. But, you know, you could say it is smart to take advantage of how angry people still are coming out of that Royal Rumble, give them hope that maybe their boy will pull it out like he did last year. Only, I don't see that happening. But after the way they marginalized Bryan in the Royal Rumble and the way in which he was eliminated without so much as a story, although now they've weaved it into the story because of all the boos for Roman Reigns. Despite that, I make this point. It is interesting to note that Daniel Bryan has now headlined the last three television shows. He headlined with Kane in a casket match on SmackDown the week before. He headlined on Raw last Monday against Seth Rollins in a great match. And he headlined again on SmackDown against Rollins and J&J Security. Now, would that have happened if Roman Reigns was cheered at the Royal Rumble? Of course not. Not a chance. But in the end, Roman Reigns is their guy. Roman Reigns is going to WrestleMania. Make no mistake about it. Maybe it's a trust issue. You know, maybe they're afraid to put him in main events on these shows because he's not ready. But you know what? If that's the case, they should have thought about that before they had the guy win the Royal Rumble. But I just thought it was interesting to look back and see that after all the stuff that went down and all the anger that has been directed at WWE because of that Rumble match and because of the finish, Daniel Bryan, let us not lose sight of the fact that he has, in fact, headlined the last three television shows. So it's just the whole thing to me is just very, very confusing. But let's go through the show here. It opened with the first ever Iron Man promo. Literally went half an hour long. About half an hour in, I was sure we had another half hour to go, followed by sudden death. Triple H was out there talking about the Super Bowl, all those angry Seahawks fans who no doubt tweeted out the hashtag cancel NFL Network. Oh, what a clever bunch. A clever bunch of writers they have here in this company. You know, I've never seen a company so openly troll its own fans before. So the gist of the promo was Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble. He's in the record books as being the winner no matter what, but he did so because of The Rock. The Rock interfered, and The Rock, therefore, had an impact on the finish of that match. And they were kind of teasing they were going to take away Roman Reigns' title opportunity at WrestleMania. So he came down. He says, hell no, I'm not letting you take it away from me. Daniel Bryan came out. He says that I was never beaten for the championship, so I deserve a shot. And then Seth Rollins came out, and he said some stuff. And so Triple H set up Seth Rollins against Daniel Bryan with the winner meeting Roman Reigns at Fastlane for the right to wrestle Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. We never did find out what Triple H's big earth-shattering announcement was that he promised the world on SmackDown. So, boy, it's a good thing those three guys came out then, since apparently Triple H went out there without having anything to announce. Here's just some of my takeaways from this opening segment here. A couple of things I don't like. I don't like the marginalizing of the Royal Rumble match. It's not the first time they've done this, not the first time that somebody has put their shot up for grabs. I always thought it was stupid. I thought it was stupid when Shawn Michaels did it with Owen Hart in 1996, and I think it's stupid today in 2015. So at least I've been consistent in that opinion. I just think it's completely dumb, and it made Roman Reigns look like an idiot for accepting. Even though I know in WWE land, that's what all babyfaces are supposed to do. Well, you're a babyface. You've got to stand up to the odds. I mean, John Cena would overcome the odds, so therefore Roman Reigns must overcome the odds. It'd be nice every now and then to have a babyface who maybe wasn't a total babyface. Maybe they're even more of a tweener, and they don't give a shit. And they actually use logic and common sense and be like, no, I won the Royal Rumble fair and square. Fuck you. I'm going to WrestleMania. Kiss my ass. And turn around and walk out. You know, I bet if Roman Reigns had done that, the whole building would have cheered him. But he did the whole cliche, okay, I'll do it. I'll fight both of you. I'll see you at Fastlane. And to me, it didn't make him seem tough. It made him seem like an idiot. And that's not how you really need to be positioning your top or one of your top baby faces, I think. It's not his fault. It's just in the way they do things. I just thought it was dumb. But the marginalization of the Royal Rumble match, I mean, as if the last 2 years have not done enough damage to the Royal Rumble name and the Royal Rumble match, they pull this nonsense. I mean, it's a case where there was no disputed finish here. There was nothing to dispute about the finish. Maybe on some years there's been a finish where you could say, well, that was a little bit suspect, or this guy really should not have won, or the referee's back was turned. You know, like Austin when he threw out Bret Hart in 1997. Bret threw Austin out. Refs didn't see it. Then Austin came back in, threw Bret out, won the Rumble. If you're Bret Hart, you know what? Looking back on it, he had a right to complain and bitch and say, you screwed me, I quit, which is what he did on Raw the next night. In this case, there was none of that. So again, it goes back to their writing and booking of the Royal Rumble match. Maybe they should have thought these things out in advance if the follow-up was going to be what we have here. You look back at the Rumble, it's like, they didn't do any of that stuff. They didn't give us any reason at all for this to be happening in the first place. And Daniel Bryan does not deserve the shot. If you go by the storyline of what happened, Daniel Bryan coming out and saying, well, I was never beaten for the championship, which he already told us before, finally, in that sit-down interview the night after the Rumble. I've been crowing about that for weeks, and they finally had him openly mention the fact that, oh, by the way, the Authority stripped me of my title. Now I'm back. I was never actually beaten for the belt. I'm the uncrowned champion. Bryan's been back for like a month now, month and a half. It took him that long to finally say something on TV. Now they trot him out there again this week, and he's out there saying, well, I never got beaten for the championship. And Triple H put him in his place by saying, yeah, well, when you came back, you shouldn't have shot your mouth off on night one and said, I'm putting my name in the Royal Rumble. Had you not have done that, perhaps you would have gotten a title shot. And I heard Triple H say that, and I thought to myself, he's right. Shouldn't that have been the first thing that Daniel Bryan said when he came back on television? You know, before he even mentioned the words Royal Rumble, is say that, listen, you know, I'm back, and oh, by the way, I am the uncrowned world champion because Brock Lesnar never beat me. Nobody beat me for the belt. They waited a month, month and a half to finally say something about it. So there's Daniel Bryan out there basically trying to steal Roman Reigns' title shot away. Roman Reigns won fair and square. Daniel Bryan lost fair and square. He looked like an idiot. He got knocked off the apron. Both feet touched the floor. That's it. But now they're trying to tell a story that just doesn't jive with what we saw at the Rumble. And just, I don't know, it doesn't make for good storytelling to me. It just doesn't. So all of this segued into another Roman Reigns versus Big Show match, which I know the world was clamoring for. This time Big Show pinned Roman Reigns with a chokeslam with an assist from Seth Rollins. Roman's first ever pinfall loss in a singles match on television. This coming off winning the Royal Rumble. and they beat him. I find it funny that Brock Lesnar's first title loss on television back in 2002 when he was undefeated and he was the next big thing and he was running through guys, he ran through The Undertaker. His first loss, even then, came to, of all people, The Big Show. And here we are, fast forward, 2015, what is it, 13 years later? And the very first singles loss of Roman Reigns' career by pinfall comes at the hands of The Big Show. We had a segment where Curtis Axel, who was never actually eliminated from the Royal Rumble match, Eric Rowan hit him from behind and took his spot, came out to lay claim to his championship match with Brock Lesnar, said he was going to WrestleMania, posed on the turnbuckles, pointed at the sign. You know, for all the people saying that Curtis Axel is the uncrowned winner of the Royal Rumble, you do realize that Roman Reigns was never eliminated either. So technically, Curtis Axel, you could argue, was never eliminated, but it's not like he's the winner. That would imply that every single other person who entered the match was eliminated. That's not true. So I think some people may be mixing up their words here. But this was all just a set of Dean Ambrose coming out. He threw Axel out over the top rope, said, "Now you're eliminated," and cut a promo on Wade Barrett and said he was coming for the Intercontinental title. He actually made reference to the match that he beat Barrett in a few weeks ago on Raw. So a little bit of actual storyline continuity there, somebody focusing on a championship and the importance of having a title. I mean, is this Raw? Is this the same show I watch every week? I had a look at the channel guide to make sure I wasn't dreaming, and it was USA Network. It said Monday Night Raw. I was amazed. So this is all just because they don't have anything better for Dean Ambrose. So on the one hand, while I'm happy to see them doing that, and I would love to think, that this is the start of them actually wanting to make the Intercontinental title mean something by having Dean Ambrose, who is a bigger star right now than Barrett is, beat Barrett, become the champion, and somehow elevate the prestige level of that championship and be a fighting, defending Intercontinental champion. And then I think back to when Ambrose had the U.S. title, and they practically, not even practically, there was one segment I remember on TV where they openly mocked the fact that he never defended the United States Championship. And to his credit, Ambrose had a great line. I remember it was funny where he said, I don't defend the title too often. Too much paperwork. And it was good for a laugh, but it was also sad. The guy never defended the U.S. title. So why should we think that him being the Intercontinental Champion, if he wins it, why should we think it's going to be any different? And the way they've treated that championship, I'm not even sure I want Dean Ambrose to be the Intercontinental Champion for his own sake. That title, I mean, that could be a career killer, a career suicide for him if he wins that thing. I mean, look at poor Wade Barrett ever since he won it. He can't win a match to save his life. Even on house shows. I'm not even talking TV. On the house shows, he can't even win matches. Before the SmackDown taping last week, I think it was, he lost in a dark match. It was either R-Truth or Sin Cara. I think it was R-Truth. He lost to R-Truth in a dark match, and he's the Intercontinental Champion. What does that say about what WWE thinks of the Intercontinental title? Why should we want Dean Ambrose to win that thing? They certainly have not given us a reason. I think for his sake, I'm rooting for Wade Barrett. And by the way, I forgot to mention this when Curtis Axel came out. And we could say a lot of things about Curtis Axel and how he's a jobber and they don't do anything with him. And you can point and laugh and mock him. But when he came out, I think he actually came out and said, like, don't change the channel, you know, and then he came out. And JBL, who is one of the announcers for this television show, on commentary, shit all over Curtis Axel and actually told people to change the channel when Curtis Axel came out. Fuck JBL. They're doing the personal assistant storyline now that they did a few months ago with the Bella Twins. For those of you who have already forgotten and blocked it out of your mind, the storyline that went nowhere and never had any sort of logical conclusion. Now, Miz and Mizdow have the same storyline going, because Miz fired Mizdow as his stunt double and said, you are going to instead be my personal assistant. So he fired him and immediately rehired him in a different position. And so they're building to the split. They're not just teasing it or alluding to it. They're outright preparing for the split between Miz and Mizdow. My hope with this is that they keep this going and they keep building it and building it and building it until WrestleMania. I still think the most appropriate place for it is the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, assuming they do that again. You could say, let's do Miz versus Mizdow in a singles match. I just think the WrestleMania card's going to have so many matches anyway, and it looks like they're already building to a match between Goldust and Cody Rhodes, or Gold and Stardust, whatever. I've read the stories about how Goldust is winding down. He's going to probably be transitioning into a producer role again behind the scenes. This could be it for him, and he's going to finally have the chance to work a match with his brother. I think that that should be a singles match at WrestleMania, absolutely. But to do that and to do Miz versus Mizdow in a singles match and have a 20-man battle royal, I think is overkill. I think you put Miz and Mizdow in the battle royal. You do in the battle royal what you could have done in the Royal Rumble, which is do a spot where maybe Miz gets eliminated and Mizdow is conflicted. He doesn't know what to do. Should he hurl himself over the top rope and eliminate himself? Should he not do that? They did a similar spot at the Rumble, but they kind of even bungled that, to be honest with you. This would require Mizdow be rehired as his stunt double again before WrestleMania, because I guess they've already fired him as the stunt double. So it makes it harder to do that. But let's assume that sometime between now and Mania, he's back being the stunt double. You go into that battle royal, you can do that spot. You know what? I actually think Mizdow can win the whole thing. I think Damian Mizdow is my pick to hopefully win the Andre battle royal. Maybe it comes down to the two of them. Maybe you do it that way. Maybe it comes down to Miz and Mizdow, and Miz says, listen, you are my stunt double. I command you to eliminate yourself. Or if he's not the stunt double, you're my personal assistant. You're my bitch, whatever his title is at that point. You have to do what I tell you to do. Now, eliminate yourself. And Mizdow looks out at this massive crowd, 75,000 people who are going nuts. I mean, think DiBiase and Virgil, okay, at the Royal Rumble in 91, when they did the turn there, and Virgil, after years of all that abuse, finally had enough, and he waffled DiBiase upside the head with the $1 million belt. He stood up for himself for the first time, and he got one of the biggest ovations on the entire show. Virgil, the fucking bodyguard that people hated and didn't care much about, got a tremendous ovation because people want to get behind somebody like that. Well, you can do a similar thing here with Mizdow. Looks at the big crowd. Everyone's going crazy. They're chanting his name. They're telling him, no, no, don't do it. And in the end, he doesn't. And he somehow ends up winning the entire thing and gets a huge ovation. Because to me, you don't have to use the Andre Battle Royal to build like the next big star. It'd be nice if it actually meant something. I think that'd be a bigger honor to Andre the Giant than anything else, if the winner of this Andre Battle Royal actually was somebody that we're going to do something with. We found out the hard way last year that that's not the case. We were all fooled into thinking it was, that it would mean something, and then we all saw what happened with Cesaro, and they turned the Battle Royal into just another fucking match on the show. So if that's the case, it almost doesn't even matter who wins it. I don't see Damian Mizdow, even without the Mizdow gimmick, ever getting above a certain level in that company. He's never going to be a headliner. He's never going to be a main eventer. That's just the way it is. That's just how it is. But so what? I think the culmination of this story with him and Miz, that would be the most appropriate place for it. So I'm hoping they can drag it out long enough to pay it off there. So now they're starting to plant those seeds. Later in the show, they had a match between the Miz and Sin Cara. And I know why they did the match. I know why they did it. Okay, it was done to further the Miz and Mizdow stuff, but this is one of the problems, I think, with the formatting of the show. If you're going to have a match between The Miz and Sin Cara, of all people, okay, the NXT guy, that's what he is now, right? Former NXT Tag Team Champion, he's been down there wrestling with Kalisto. You're going to have a Sin Cara-Miz match on Monday Night Raw. You better get that shit done early. Like, in the first hour, maybe early in the second hour. You cannot wait until the middle of the third hour of this show to throw those two guys out there and not expect people to just be passed out asleep on the couch. I mean, like, you can't put a match like that in the middle of the third hour, which is already dragging enough as it is. You've got to take a match like that and bump it up. I mean, when those two guys came out, I knew what they were doing, but it's like, I can't believe this. I can't believe I'm sitting and watching a Miz Sin Cara match, and it's like 10:20 or 10:30, whatever time it was. That's my only real complaint about it. Otherwise, it was just a match to set up for the finish. You know, Mizdow wanted badly to be the stunt double. Miz kept telling him, no, stand there, don't do anything, don't say anything. Finally, Mizdow cracked at the end, and people were going nuts for him, and that distracted the Miz, and we had a distraction roll-up finish. Sin Cara pinned the Miz. And I said earlier, this is one of those instances where a distraction roll-up actually does make sense. It does. I was perfectly fine with this being a distraction roll-up finish. It's just the fact they just overdo it so much, that I have a problem with. but this was fine. Just to backtrack here, there was a match between Ryback and Luke Harper. Ryback pinned Harper with the shell shock. Pretty good big man match here. I don't really have anything to say negative about it. It was actually pretty good. I really hope they revisit the Ryback-Rusev feud for WrestleMania, because what a waste that whole thing was if they don't go back to it. And to do that, you've got to have Rusev beat Cena at Fastlane. Even if he has to cheat, even if it's a controversial finish or a bullshit finish of some kind, you can't have Cena beat Rusev and end the streak and take the title from him. You've got to have Rusev go over, and that would then require them to move on and not do a rematch with Cena at WrestleMania, which I think is very unlikely. So that's a shame. Maybe I'm wrong and they'll go back and do Ryback and Rusev, and they'll give Ryback the rub, and maybe they'll make Ryback the guy to finally beat the streak and become the new United States champion. I still think the fans could get behind Ryback being the one to take the title from him. The fans are still into Ryback. I mean, he's having a career resurgence here, and it just feels to me like they had a story that the people could really buy, and they just, as they do so many times, they abandoned it. They had one match on television, and it had nothing to do with their feud. It had nothing to do with the U.S. title. I think wasn't it just a match to see if Ryback could qualify to get into the Royal Rumble? I mean, that's it? That's the big payoff? There's got to be more to it than that. Cesaro obliterated Jimmy Uso with an uppercut as Jimmy came off the top for a frog splash, and he pinned him. Tyson Kidd got a cheap shot in on Jay after the match when he went to go check on his brother. That should be a hell of a tag team title match at Fastlane if they decide to do it there. Bray Wyatt said he fears nothing, either the living or dead. That was a clip they aired from his promo on SmackDown the week before. So there you go. I mean, that tells you right there what they're building him for WrestleMania. In his latest promo that he did later on this show last Monday, he told the mystery person that he's been talking about in these promos to find me. Find me, he said. Speaking of Wyatt, he had a match with Dolph Ziggler. Long match. They gave these guys a long time. I think it went through like two commercial breaks. One for sure, maybe two. It was kind of dead at the beginning of the match, and I was not really feeling it. But as it went on, the crowd got into it, as they usually do in a Dolph Ziggler match. He finds a way to get them into it. He's actually very good. I know that's a newsflash. Dolph Ziggler is very good. And he delivered a Famasser to Bray Wyatt towards the end, which Bray Wyatt promptly got up and no-sold, and then he caught Dolph Ziggler for the Sister Abigail and pinned him. And the way some of these guys have been no-selling big moves, we saw this with Luke Harper a few weeks ago. I think it was actually in a match with Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler hit him with a super kick, which Harper no-sold, and then he just killed the guy with a lariat clothesline. Here we had Bray Wyatt do the same thing with the Famasser. Now, Bray, as many of you pointed out on Twitter, Bray is a big Nakamura fan. This goes to the point that I actually made, which was that these guys have totally been watching New Japan Pro Wrestling. And as you guys pointed out, you know, Bray is a big Nakamura fan. And so is actually Daniel Bryan, for the record. Bryan actually has said that Nakamura is his favorite wrestler in the world right now. His favorite guy to watch. So I'm definitely seeing some New Japan influence in some of these matches that these guys are sneaking in there. I'm sure it's not the agents telling them. And I like it. I like it. Not that I like moves just being no-sold, but there are times when you do it and it kind of works, and I felt like it worked here. Diva stopwatch, 2 minutes and 43 seconds for Paige pinning Alicia Fox. Bella Twins were on commentary. They're building to a Paige-Nikki match for the championship at Fastlane. So all of a sudden, Paige is getting a title shot. Okay. So Paige wins the match. Bella's coming to the ring when the match is over, and they spray paint Paige. They have a can of black spray paint. They spray paint her midsection, her torso. Black spray paint. And I just thought to myself, well, it is Black History Month. We then had Rusev and Rowan. They were supposed to have a match. It never got started. Rusev beat the shit out of Eric Rowan. And then this was the best part. And this is what made Rusev and Lana like favorites to me. They were so awesome here. So they do this segment, they beat down Rowan, and the flag is supposed to come down, as it usually does, right? You hear the big boom and the flag comes down, the Russian flag. Only the flag did not completely unfurl. It was botched. The unrolling of the flag was botched. And Rusev looked, and everyone's laughing now. So Rusev looks up, he sees it, And he starts to freak out. And Lana's freaking out. They're both freaking out. And he's like, he reaches and grabs the flag, which is in that little pole stand on the floor. He starts waving the flag violently back and forth. Just, you had to see this. The way they played off the whole thing. And then the announcers finally were like, there must have been John Cena. John Cena's playing games here. John Cena wasn't playing games. They botched it. It was some kind of a botch. But the way they played off of it, you would never know. I mean, there were plenty of people who saw that and probably just thought it was part of the show and it was supposed to happen that way. And who knows, maybe now they'll incorporate that into the show this week and they'll have the flag thing be botched again and they'll give John Cena credit for it. But there's no way that was supposed to happen on purpose. This was an accident, and I thought Rusev and Lana here were just fantastic. They were great. Main event was Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins, with the winner meeting Roman Reigns at Fastlane for the right to go to WrestleMania. No surprise with these two guys in there. They had a freaking great match. Roman Reigns came out for one of the best spots of the entire night. Credit where credit is due. Big Show had sauntered down during the match to just watch the action from ringside. Roman Reigns came out and delivered probably the best spear I've ever seen him give. Either that one or the one he gave to Rey Mysterio at Survivor Series a couple of years ago. There's some Roman Reigns spears that stick out of my mind. This was great in that he was still like several feet away from the Big Show, and he launched himself through the air. So it's almost like a flying spear. And he took the Big Show down, and he went to go spear Seth Rollins on the outside. Rollins moved. I think Reigns accidentally speared Joey Mercury. So Rollins gets back in the ring, and the referee is doing whatever he's doing. The referee ends up getting distracted. And that allows Roman Reigns to deliver a Superman punch to Rollins, who had his head, like, he was kind of leaning through the ropes, and he was being all cocky and arrogant, and he paid the price for it. And that allowed Daniel Bryan to hit the flying knee. Rollins always takes a great bump for that move. Rollins is just a great bumper, period. I still remember when the Rhodes brothers were fighting for their jobs, and they actually beat Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins at the Battleground pay-per-view a couple of years ago. And Cody Rhodes hit the crossroads on Seth Rollins, and I remember Seth Rollins hit the best bump for a crossroads that I had ever seen. That match is so underrated. You don't hear about that match. That match was so great. So anyway, Rollins took it like a champ, got pinned. Daniel Bryan is the winner, and so it is Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns at Fastlane, with the winner going to WrestleMania to wrestle for the championship. I thought Roman Reigns, at the end of this show, from the spear to everything, this is the Roman Reigns that we should have seen in the build to the Royal Rumble. How come we didn't get this Roman Reigns that we got on Raw this past Monday night in the build-up to the Royal Rumble? Why were we getting Roman Reigns on SmackDown talking about suffering succotash and talking about magic beanstalks and bullshit? Who thought that was a good idea? Why couldn't we get this Roman Reigns? Had we gotten this Roman Reigns, maybe he wouldn't have gotten booed. So it's Reigns and Bryan. The good news is that Daniel Bryan will, in all likelihood, give Roman Reigns the best match of his career. He will make Roman look strong. The bad news is that if they're not changing their plans, and I don't think they are, I think they have their WrestleMania plans, and that's that. And if they're not turning Reigns heel, at least not yet, then this is probably the absolute worst thing they could possibly be doing. If the idea is that Roman Reigns will beat Daniel Bryan in a competitive match, and therefore will earn the respect of the fans, good luck with that. Good luck with that. All they're doing, and we saw some of it here at the end of the show, Daniel Bryan got on the microphone. He actually got booed. He got booed a little bit when he said that he would beat Roman Reigns and go on to WrestleMania, and then he started the yes chant, and most people were cheering him, and most people were yesing along with him, but there were definite boos. There were audible boos from the crowd directed towards Daniel Bryan when he said that at the end of the show. My fear is that all they're going to end up doing is splitting the reaction and getting both guys more boos. Therefore, nobody wins. You know, Daniel Bryan comes off as something like a bully here because he lost the Royal Rumble fair and square. There really was no controversy about it. If we're breaking kayfabe here, then yes, it was controversial to book him the way that they did, and it pissed a lot of people off. But in storyline, I fail to see what the real controversy is. Triple H was on SmackDown the week before, the controversial finish of the Royal Rumble. What's so controversial about it? I don't understand. I don't get it. The Rock? The Rock came out, he beat up Big Show and Kane, they were already eliminated. Where's the controversy here? If the idea is that, well, Bryan never got a rematch for the title that he never really lost, like I said earlier, they should have given that some thought before doing what they did. Would it not have made more sense to hold him out of the Royal Rumble match completely, let him show up the night after, and then cut the same promo that he did at the beginning of this show? Then it would have made sense, and he would have had a strong case for a match at Fastlane with Roman Reigns. But I will say, the Roman Reigns we saw here is the Roman Reigns that we should have seen the moment he came back from that injury, from that hernia. The same Reigns that we should have seen in the Rumble match, killing dudes, tossing them out, not laying in the corner taking a nap. And they wonder why people have turned on the guy. Some quick NXT notes first. Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy, the current NXT Tag Team Champions, may have dropped their first names per an item I noticed this week on PWMania.com. And that's funny, coming off the fact that right here on the Sound Off last week, I made the comment that they should probably drop their first names, especially in the case of Buddy Murphy, because the name Buddy Murphy does not scream main eventer. Better to get that name Buddy out of the way first. Call him Murphy. You know, call the guy Murphy. There's nothing wrong with that. So I was talking about that last week, and then I read that item this week, and I thought, good for them. That's the right move to make. I guess we'll know for sure on the special that's coming up live this Wednesday if they refer to them by their first names or not. Even if they do, that doesn't mean that they're not going to phase the first names out. I don't have that confirmed, but it does look like that may be in the works, and I think it's the right move to make. And then the other thing is this preposterous Kalisto rumor. I didn't even comment on it on Twitter when it first broke. I just thought it sounded completely stupid, like somebody was trolling. I know where it came from, and sometimes that guy is a reliable source on Reddit. Sometimes he isn't. I never believed it for a second. I mean, just come on, people. The rumor is that Kalisto was going to be unmasked, and they were going to give him a gay hairdresser gimmick because they had him try it out on a show, and he blew him out of the water. Even in the verbiage of the report, he blew them out of the water. I mean, come on. So everybody got trolled very hard on that. And it's not happening, people. Okay? It's not happening. Why would they even do that? Kalisto is the closest thing they have to a replacement for Rey Mysterio. And Rey has got one foot out the door. He'll be in Lucha Underground in a few months. Sin Cara was a bust. Why would they unmask the guy and give him a ridiculous gimmick that is bound to fail? So no, he is not going to be a gay hairdresser, at least not anytime soon. NXT this week opened with Carmella being introduced by Kaz and Enzo. She beat Emma in a short match. If you remember last week, Emma did a promo and said that things had not worked out too well for herself on the main roster, so she was back in NXT for how long, I don't know, and this was going to be a new Emma. And Emma came out, and it was exactly the old Emma. She came out, same music, same bubbles, same dancing, everything. And she lost in about a minute. Carmella beat her with her head scissors submission. She tapped out. They're obviously telling a story with Emma because the camera focused on her outside the ring when the match was over. Emma was very angry. It almost looked like she was going to go back in the ring and attack Carmella and just snap. I figured they're probably building to it. At some point, she does snap, and hopefully that will be a new look or a new direction for her character. Maybe she'll be a heel. Who knows? All I know is that from what I've seen and know of Emma, she's a really good wrestler, and she really hasn't had a chance to show that yet. She had some great matches, even with that gimmick, in NXT. She had some with Paige and others. She really hasn't had the chance to show how good she really is, and I just hope whatever they're doing here, whatever losing streak they're going to put her on now, if that's the plan, that it actually does build to something, and then maybe she could take that and come back to the main roster and get a second chance, because she deserves it. Adrian Neville and Baron Corbin had a semifinal match in the number one contenders tournament for the NXT Championship. This is certainly a unique match, a match that we have never seen before. And somewhat surprisingly, Adrian Neville beat Baron Corbin. I think I predicted Neville would win, but I was surprised that they just had him pin Corbin. He pinned him with the red arrow. Bull Dempsey did run down, as I suspected he would be involved. He sent Baron Corbin headfirst into the ring post, and, you know, that's one of the things I love about NXT. It's the lack of bullshit finishes. When they happen, there's a reason for them. They had a perfect excuse here in this match to have Corbin lose by countout after Bull Dempsey ran down. He posted him, okay? So that way, Corbin gets to keep his undefeated streak intact because he wasn't pinned, he wasn't made to submit. And it still sets up a revenge match with Bull Dempsey for costing him a shot at the championship. But nope, they had Neville, the former champion, pin him and end the streak. Which, if anything, puts even more heat on Corbin's match with Bull Dempsey at TakeOver, because they're going to have a third match now. I love it. I love it. Had this taken place on Raw, you know full well this would have ended with a fuck finish, because behind the scenes, they're a bunch of nymphomaniacs. All they love to do is fuck people. The match itself was okay. It wasn't really meant to be anything spectacular. Baron Corbin is a lot bigger than Adrian Neville, so, you know, he sold some of his moves, had a couple of power moves at one point. I think Neville came off the ropes and Corbin nailed him. He's got a really good right hand. It looks good. It sounds good. The people react to it. But if there's one realization I had here in this match, I know I floated the idea on the Sound Off before that if they wanted to go down this road with Rusev and keep him undefeated and maybe save that first win over him for a new guy, maybe try to get somebody new over from NXT, my suggestion was to go with Baron Corbin. Maybe you keep Rusev undefeated through Mania, which is kind of a shocker because I think most people expect him to lose by WrestleMania, if not at Fastlane, to John Cena. And he comes out with Lana on Raw the next night, still undefeated, still the U.S. champion, cocky as can be, puts down the gauntlet, throws out an open challenge, out comes some NXT guy. Out comes Baron Corbin, he beats Rusev in like 20 seconds flat, 30 seconds flat with his move. And I've talked about that idea, and I watched this match, and Corbin was not bad. But what I realized is that that will not work, because he is not ready. WrestleMania is not that far away. It is now February. WrestleMania is the end of next month. He is not ready. Baron Corbin has a lot of potential. I think he has the potential to be a very big star because they like big guys, so he'll get chances that maybe some other guys won't have. And I think he may be good enough to get there at some point. But this match, more than any other match he's had so far, because this may have been the longest match I've ever seen him in, told me he's not ready. And he definitely needs some more time down there. So hopefully they'll give it to him. Bayley had a match with Becky Lynch. She beat Becky with the belly to Bayley suplex. Sasha Banks came down towards the end of the match to seemingly root on Becky Lynch. Becky ended up on the outside at one point. And the great friend that she is, Sasha threw her into the ring like it was a lumberjack match. And she threw her right into a belly to Bayley suplex. Bayley got the pin. When the match was over, Becky shoved down Sasha, making it very clear that there will be no friends in this Fatal 4-Way Women's Title match at TakeOver. The main event was Finn Balor and Hideo Itami. And this is a match that I was very much looking forward to. This was a semifinal match in the NXT Number 1 Contenders Tournament. Possibly the first match these two guys have ever had. I'm not really sure. I didn't look it up. Certainly the first time I've ever seen them wrestle. They've been partners so far since they came to NXT. And they had, surprise, surprise, an awesome match. I love this. This was great. Finn Balor beat him clean. Clean in the middle with a double foot stomp off the top rope to advance to the finals. And a match with Adrian Neville at TakeOver. So we are, in fact, going to get the match that earned both guys a contract on the indies. The two of them shook hands on stage when this was over. Adrian Neville had been out there doing color commentary, so he ended up on stage, shook hands with Finn Balor as the segment came to an end. But yeah, he was out there doing color commentary for the match, Adrian Neville was, and doing a poor job of it, I might add. He was not very good. If there's one criticism of this match that I have, and it has nothing at all to do with Finn Balor, it has nothing at all to do with Hideo Itami, it was how insufferable Alex Riley was on commentary, trying to act like fucking Walter Cronkite out there, asking Adrian Neville the probing questions that Adrian Neville had no real answers for. It was all bullshit and fluff anyway. I mean, it's funny. At one point, he asked Neville a question. I don't remember which question it was, but he asked him a question, and then and this is what Alex Riley said. He asked him the question, and he goes, "When you answer, please answer in as explicit detail as possible. Like, please be as specific as possible." Like, what is this guy, a human midterm? Please be as specific as possible. I used to see those questions, like the essay questions, when I used to take tests in college. I mean, who does this guy think he is? He was the drizzling shits during this match. I mean, Alex Riley has really devolved as an announcer on this show. I used to think he was actually really good, and he has just become the JBL on commentary of NXT. It's awful. It's absolutely terrible. The match itself was awesome. We got a better than Raw chant early on, which most weeks would be true. We did get, you know, a damn good match between Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan at the end of Raw last Monday that I think could have headlined a WrestleMania had you given them 10 to 15 more minutes. I mean, that's how good those two guys were together. So I have to be fair about that. That might not be true this week. Most weeks, absolutely, better than anything you would see on a Monday night. The crowd also chanted, "We're not worthy," at Balor and Itami, and they chanted, "We're marking out," which is when I thought they jumped the shark. You know, it wasn't cool when Matt Stryker said it on commentary that time, and it's not any more cool now that the fans are doing it. We had another GTS tease in this match from Itami, who's got to hit that thing at some point. I mean, he just has to. Finn Balor got his mouth bloodied up from a strike to the face. It may have been a forearm. But the big spot of the match was there were two drop kicks that Balor delivered in this match that were very impressive. One almost rivaled the Okada drop kick. It was a very impressive high drop kick early in the match. That wasn't even the most impressive thing. The most impressive drop kick in this match came at the finish when Itami was getting up, Balor's in the corner, and Balor charges out of the corner, hits Itami with a front drop kick, and Itami just gets launched backwards into the turnbuckle. Just his head crashed into the second turnbuckle. I mean, how this guy wasn't concussed, if he wasn't concussed, is a miracle to me. I mean, this was a sick bump. He ricocheted backwards into the turnbuckles. Just a brutal spot. But between that and the double foot stomp, which they showed in slow motion, I mean, this looked great. This looked like a match between two guys that were actually beating the shit out of each other. And one guy even got bloodied up. So how can you have a problem with that? You know what I mean? I mean, you got two guys, you're in there, you're in a tournament. The winner is going to go to the finals to potentially wrestle for the championship. I would expect these two guys to go in there and beat the crap out of each other, and that's what they did. So I have no complaints. When the match was over, they did shake hands, little code of honor that they were adhering to there. What we didn't see was a video they put up on WWE's YouTube channel when the show was over. In the back, Hideo Itami was attempting to be interviewed when Tyler Breeze attacked him from out of nowhere, and Tyler Breeze yelled at him a little bit, said, "You took away my opportunity." So obviously they're building to a match between Itami and Breeze. I don't think it's happening at the TakeOver special unless they add it at the last minute. I hope not. They've got 2 hours. They've already got a full slate of matches that we're going to go over here in a second. I almost feel like it would just be tacked on. It would take time away from some of the other key matches. NXT is usually pretty good about taking time to build things up, so they'll either save it for the next special, or more likely it'll be the main event on NXT next week or the week after would be my guess. And Breeze and Itami have been going back and forth on Twitter now. It's actually really funny. It's very entertaining. They've been going back and forth with insults on Twitter for a while, and now it looks like it is going to culminate in an actual match. And who knows, maybe Breeze will be the first one to eat the GTS. That was not the end of the show. The show did not end with Finn Balor and Hideo Itami. That was the main event, but the show ended with a video package, a hype package for the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens Championship match at TakeOver this week. And I will tell you right now, if you have not seen this video package, this is among the best that I think WWE has ever done. I can't put it on top. I mean, they've done some pretty damn good promo packages before, but I'd put this one up in the top 10. I mean, this was phenomenal. This was great. And not just because they had old photos of them, even though that was awesome and it played well into the story. They had photos of them back when they were kids first starting out in the business. And Owens was like, you know, all those places that Sami Zayn talks about that he's been to before all over the world, I've been there too, by the way. And Sammy screwed it up. He got called up first. It was supposed to be both of us getting, you know, the big call. And Kevin Owens is so awesome. I mean, Sami Zayn is too. But the way that Owens was in this package when they would talk to him, and he said, "Listen, I was very happy when Sami Zayn, my best friend, won the championship at TakeOver. I really, truly felt happy for him. And I still do." And you watch him, because here's a guy that just beat the crap out of Sami Zayn, right? He powerbombed him on the apron, he ruined his big moment. he's lying through his teeth, right? But you watch him and you think to yourself, no, he's not lying through his teeth. You know, the character actually seems to believe what he's saying. You know, maybe the guy's a sociopath in some ways. I don't know. He's justifying it by saying, no, you know, I'm very happy for him, but this is what he did to slight me, and so I got my revenge. And at the end of the day, it's all about the championship and being able to make more money and put more food on the table for my family. I got a wife. I got two kids. They showed photos of him with his kids. Sami Zayn in the promo package said that everything was cool until, you know, he got married and he had kids, and that's when things changed. And Kevin Owens said, yeah, you're right. You know, things have changed. Here's the difference between myself and Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn's got one person to watch out for and care about, himself. I've got a family. I'm thinking about more than just myself. It's just so different. It's so different than any other heel character in WWE. I mean, maybe the closest thing to it that I could compare it to would be Chris Jericho in 2008, when Jericho completely transformed his whole character. He started wearing suits and talking very low. And the genesis of the Chris Jericho heel turn back in 08 was, if you remember, the whole Shawn Michaels-Batista thing, where Shawn faked the knee injury, beat Batista. Jericho knew he was faking the injury, even though he wouldn't admit to it. And he started calling Shawn a liar and a hypocrite and all these different things. It was because, as Jericho says the same thing in his book, you know, what made it work, it wasn't just, oh, I'm going to turn on somebody and I'm a heel, so you should boo me. It was, no, like, why don't the fans see that this guy is a phony? Like, I'm telling the truth, and people don't want to hear the truth. And so it just kind of organically ended up turning him heel. With Kevin Owens, I think everything he says, right, we're supposed to think he believes. He believes everything that he says. He's just an evil guy. There's nothing that Kevin Owens is doing right now in NXT on television that would get you to cheer for him. And so people will say, well, and NXT, it's all smart marks in the crowd. Well, guess what? All those smart marks, you would think they'd be cheering their heads off for Kevin Steen, right, when he comes out, but they're not. They're booing him. And that's a sign that he's doing his job very well. In fact, it's almost a shame that Kevin Owens is in NXT right now. I'd love to see him on the main roster tomorrow. And hopefully he won't spend 2 years in developmental the way that Sami Zayn has spent 2 years in developmental. And Vince McMahon won't fuck him up the way that he has so many other people. Because I think with Kevin Owens, they've got something in this guy. I mean, they really do. They have something special in this character, and I hope they don't squander it. So this video package was awesome. My words don't do it justice. If it's not on the WWE YouTube channel, which it wasn't when I checked, which is horrendous. I don't know why you wouldn't put this up. This is the best advertisement possible for this network. Find it on Daily Motion. I know it's been posted in a few different places. Let's run through the card really quick here. NXT TakeOver is this Wednesday night, not Thursday. It's Wednesday night live on the WWE Network, 2 hours beginning at 8 p.m. We'll start from the bottom, work our way up to the top. Baron Corbin and Bull Dempsey, hopefully their final match. No disqualification is the stipulation. I can't recall a no DQ match on NXT since I've been watching it. I mean, I know they've had ladder matches and stuff that are innately no DQ, but just a straight, like, no-holds-barred match? Can't think of one. So I guess that kind of makes this unique. Maybe they'll use weapons, maybe they won't, maybe they'll just brawl all over the place. We've seen Baron Corbin cleanly beat Bull Dempsey twice now. I don't really see this ending any differently. I think coming off the loss, Baron Corbin is going to be pissed. He needs a comeback win. I think they have big plans for him. Not so much for Bull Dempsey. I think he's the sacrificial lamb, so Baron Corbin goes over here in this match. That's my pick. Blake and Murphy defending the tag team titles in a rematch against Sin Cara and Kalisto. I don't see the need to put the belts back on them. I think Blake and Murphy have a huge upside. You keep the belts on them and put them over strong. So they're my pick to retain. Charlotte, Bayley, Sasha Banks, and Becky Lynch fatal four-way for the Women's Championship. It's a crapshoot how this match is going to be. It's the first four-way women's match of this kind that we've seen. The four-way we had with Tyson Kidd, Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn, and Tyler Breeze was one of the best matches all year last year. I don't know if this can quite reach that same level. It's just a completely unique circumstance. We haven't seen these women in this kind of match before. It could be really, really good, or it can end up being really, really bad. I'm looking forward to seeing what they got up their sleeve here. I think that it's been long enough. It's time to put the championship on Bayley. I think they've teased it for so long, and she was always on the losing end or screwed out of it somehow, and the fans are still into her. She's a great underdog character, And it allows you to have Bayley win, but not actually pin Charlotte. If they don't want to have Bayley beat Charlotte, who's their chosen one, they could very easily have Bayley beat Sasha or have Bayley beat Becky Lynch. So I think Bayley is my pick here. I'm going to pick her. I think she goes over. I think she wins the championship. Finals of the NXT number one contenders tournament, Adrian Neville and Finn Balor. Let me tell you something. I'm going to do WWE a favor. I'm going to advertise their network for them very simply. If you are one of these people who is still on the fence about the network, first of all, I don't know why you would be. It's free. It doesn't cost you a thing. I mean, I guess you have to give your credit card information, but unlike New Japan World, they're not going to bill you and then reimburse you. They just want it on file. It's free. Take advantage of the free month, seriously, because I cannot recommend this show enough just based off the two main events. You've got Adrian Neville and Finn Balor in the finals of this tournament, and you've got Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, the first Steen Generico match, okay, in WWE for the championship. You know that these four guys on that stage are going to go out there, they're going to tear it up, they're going to want to put on the freaking match of the year in both cases. And in the end, the fans win. If these four guys are motivated to go out there and steal the show, then we're in for a real treat on Wednesday night. I say this all the time when the NXT specials come up. I always look forward to the NXT specials way more than I do when WWE has a pay-per-view coming up. With the possible exception of WrestleMania, and I don't even know, to be honest with you, WrestleMania this year, the way it's shaping up, we'll see. But I am so amped up for this show. I am genuinely excited for this show. And if nothing else, you must order the network and watch this show for the two main events. I mean, it's going to be worth it all by itself. Even if they did bill you $9.99, you're going to get your money's worth with these two main event matches. Adrian Neville and Finn Balor. I'm going to go with Finn Balor. I think Balor is another one of their chosen ones. They've got big plans for him. Adrian Neville has already been the NXT champion, and he lost twice to Sami Zayn clean. Now, if Zayn loses the title and Owens wins it, it might make sense to have Neville go over here because we have seen Kevin Owens powerbomb Adrian Neville on the apron without any sort of real retribution. So there's already an issue there, and you could feed Adrian Neville to Kevin Owens maybe as his first challenger before you come back to a rematch with Zayn. That could happen. That could very well happen. I just have a feeling in my gut that Finn Balor is going over here. I think he takes it. I think Finn Balor becomes the number one contender. And I think in the main event, Kevin Owens becomes the new NXT champion. I really think the money, as they say, is in the chase. And Sami Zayn finally won the big one. So the question is, how long do you keep the title on him for? You know what? I know he hasn't really defended the championship very many times. He's had like one defense, I think, the rematch with Neville. But he had that big moment. We got the payoff. And this feud, the way they've set this up, is so freaking great. I really think the money, I mean, not that there's any money in NXT, really, but, I mean, the real money here, I think, is in Zayn chasing Owens for revenge, to get his belt back, and building Owens up as, I say monster, I don't mean monster the same way I would mean monster with, like, Brock Lesnar, but just a monster of an evil person, right? He's an evil SOB. And now he comes in. Who the hell does he think he is? He's been here 2 months. He's had two matches. This will be three. And he's going to win the championship. I don't think anybody has ever won the title that quickly before. So I think Owens does it. I think Owens pulls it out. I think he becomes the champion. I cannot say enough good things about the way this thing has been built up. I am very excited for the show on Wednesday night, as you should be too. And so those are my picks. So we'll take a quick break here, come back. I did not watch Impact. I did not see Impact. I was at that Impact taping. That was the lockdown show, the last show they did at the Manhattan Center up in the Grand Ballroom. So I've seen the show. I know what happens. I just did not have time to actually watch Impact on TV this week. So no review, but we do have a full review for Lucha Underground, which is in competition with NXT this week for Best Show. Which one is Best Show? Stay tuned and find out. ProWrestlingTees.com is your one-stop shop for all things Sound Off. We've got a ton of different t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, the Eat Sleep Sound Off repeat shirt, and original designs as well, like Let Me School You, Son. And it's not rocket science, people. And it's not rocket science that you should go right now to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off, and get yourself a shirt, maybe two. They ship all over the world, so if you are an international fan of the show, fear not, you can get your own Sound Off shirt. You can also pay via credit card or PayPal, whatever works best for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolemnMonsterSoundsOff. Buy yourself a Sound Off shirt. And the next time you go to Monday Night Raw, TNA, Ring of Honor, or just out with the family, you can represent the Sound Off with an official Sound Off t-shirt. Again, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/SolemnMonsterSoundsOff and get your shirt right now. Lucha Underground, which, by the way, for those of you with the Dish Network, in case you missed it last week, you now have access to the El Rey Network, Channel 253, so you no longer have an excuse not to check out Lucha Underground. This was one of the better episodes, I think, that they've probably done out of the 13 that they've done already. And I can safely say, after this episode, that Dario Cueto is still my favorite character on any wrestling show today. The guy is so perfect in his role. He's awesome. So the show opened with a match between Angelico and Son of Havoc with Ivelisse. Angelico got the win. There was a little bit of a miscommunication at the end where Son of Havoc collided with Ivelisse and knocked her off the apron, and that led to the finish. And they're teasing dissension now between Ivelisse and Son of Havoc. He tried to comfort her when the match was over, make sure she was okay, and she basically blew him off. We had Pentagon Jr. beating Famous B in the next match. I still want to know what's so famous about Famous B. They haven't told me yet. Pentagon won with a pretty brutal-looking armbar submission. He got the win. He would not let go of the hold, and the referee kept telling him to let go. And finally, he just bent back on Famous B's arm, snapped the arm in half, and the officials came in to tend to Famous B. Pentagon Jr., don't fuck around. This guy means business. We then got a backstage segment. Dario Cueto was talking to this monster. Now, we've seen these segments before where it looks like Cueto is in like a jail cell or a cage or whatever you want to call it, deep within the temple somewhere. So he's back in there talking to this unknown guy that we can't see off camera. And he's letting him know that she came looking for him. She is in reference to Angela Fong. That's her real name. The Asian chick that looks really angry that we've seen on television here and there over the last several weeks. We saw her at the end of last week's episode confronting Dario Cueto in his office, wanting to know, you know, about this Matanza person, and Cueto played dumb and said, I don't know who that is. So they're calling her Black Lotus. I guess that's going to be her name on the show. So that's her name. Cueto says that he knows she was a little girl back then, but you should see her now. And that's how the segment ended. So I love how they craft these little backstories to the show. It's just very well done. And I think part of the reason it stands out so much is because people love to compare it to like what's going on today in WWE. They love to compare it to the product in TNA. When you compare the storytelling here in this company on this show to what you see in WWE and TNA, I mean, this is light years ahead of anything those companies are doing. So I like that. I like that. Actually, I'll do you one better and tell you that storytelling right now, in WWE at least, is probably at an all-time low, I think. And the way they completely shit on their audience and they think we're stupid and that we don't care about that sort of thing and consistency, and they start and stop pushes and they drop things at the drop of a hat. Storytelling in WWE right now has just never been this bad. And so to compare that to something like Lucha Underground, it's like night and day. And it just makes Lucha Underground, I think, look that much better, like they got their shit together. Drago beat Aerostar with a buff blockbuster into a DDT coming off the ropes. This was wild. I mean, this was a wild. I don't think I've ever seen that move before. It wasn't off the top rope or anything. He just came off the ropes and, the old buff blockbuster move that usually Seth Rollins has done it, actually, in matches, off the top rope. And he did it here, but it turned into a DDT. Aerostar got spiked right on top of his head into the mat and pinned. So after the match, they shook hands, again, adhering to the Code of Honor, which I think Matt Stryker actually referred to it as the Code of Honor on TV, which is funny. Phoenix, in a backstage segment, was shown kickboxing somewhere in the back when he is approached by Katrina, who is the manager of Mil Muertes. And Katrina's asking him about the tattoo on his chest. What does that symbolize? Does that, stop you from being scared by the nightmares that you have, and she's going on, and she ended up kissing Phoenix, and then she told Phoenix, don't let Mill know, because if he finds out, he will bury us both alive. And then she walked off, and Phoenix looked very confused. So I don't know where that story is heading, but this was actually a pretty well-done segment. Main event was Johnny Mundo against Cage, the Monster Cage. Johnny Mundo beat Cage by DQ when King Cuerno, he's the deerhead guy, for those of you keeping score, he came down, tripped Mundo on the apron, which caused the disqualification. So apparently Johnny Mundo will be feuding next with King Cuerno. Cuerno then attacked Mundo's knee with a chair against the post. Cage started leaving. He just said, the hell with this, I'm out of here. When Dario Cueto popped out of his office and told Mundo, hey, since we're such good friends now, I'm not going to let your five-star matches end this way. And he told the referee to restart the match, even though Mundo had a bum knee. So Cage came on back. They wrestled for a few more minutes. They actually had a damn good match. I have to say, Cage is very athletic for a guy as freakishly large as he is. I mean, this guy is jacked to the gills, but he can move. And he finished off Johnny Mundo with what they call the gory special into a flatliner. That is Cage's finish. And he got the pin on Mundo, who is one of the biggest stars on Lucha Underground. So they're really putting Cage over strong here. They continue to build him up. Cage still has the remnants of Prince Puma's title belt that he literally ripped in half a few weeks ago. And he actually carries it around with him. He wore it around his neck on the way out to the ring. It's kind of like his trophy, I guess. So this was a really good main event. Show ended with Dario Cueto on the phone in his office when all of a sudden he hears a banging on the door. He tells whoever it is to go home. The show is over. And suddenly we hear the familiar voice of Alberto Del Rio. And he tells Cueto, my name is Alberto El Patron. That's the name he's going by now. But you already knew that. And then he winks at Cueto and then he smiles as we go off the air. I said this on Twitter. For all of the talk by WWE of how episodic their shows are, right? We hear it every week. The longest running episodic, this and that, and they love to tell stories and all this stuff. Nobody in wrestling does a cliffhanger better than Lucha Underground right now. This was awesome. And now they've got some more star power coming in, which is great. I think Del Rio is the first. We're going to see more. Rey Mysterio. Wouldn't shock me in the next few months to see him pop up on Lucha Underground. They've got more star power coming in. Opens up a bunch of new match possibilities. It's so tough for me now to sit here when I think back on this show and NXT to pick one, like which was the best one this week, NXT or Lucha Underground. NXT had that great Balor Itami match, that incredible video package for Zayn and Owens. Lucha Underground had a bunch of good matches up and down the card, a really strong main event, great tease at the end. I'll give the edge to Lucha Underground. I think Lucha Underground is the show of the week this week, but my recommendation, I highly suggest you check out both shows if you miss them. And if you are disenfranchised with the main product, be it WWE or TNA, and I know it sounds silly because NXT is part of WWE, but do yourself a favor, watch those two shows. There is a lot of really good, fun wrestling out there to sink your teeth into. Let's get to the mailbag. We are way over time here, so I'm not going to be able to get to a lot of questions, but you can keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We'll start here with Jason in Reno. He's been a listener for 5 years now, so what up, Jason? With Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns set to face off at Fastlane, do you see this as WWE planting the seeds for a Reigns heel turn going into WrestleMania? To me, it seems that by positioning him against Bryan, they are only setting him up to get booed out of the building when he wins. Do you think that this is what they are going to do? They're going to go through with it? Or is there a chance that this could be WWE's way of gauging the crowd further like they did with Brett and Luger back in 94 and possibly push Bryan into the main event again? I don't see this as being anything like Brett Luger in 94 at all, because I just don't think that they're as open maybe as they were last year to changing their you know, the course of their main event. I think they have their plan. They are not going to let the fans fuck with it again 2 years in a row. And I don't think anything's going to change that barring an injury. If Roman Reigns were to get hurt, then absolutely, I think Daniel Bryan gets slotted into that main event. Unless something like that happens, and I don't wish injury upon Roman Reigns, no matter how much I may want to see Brock and Bryan, I just don't see it happening. I don't think they care to gauge the fan reaction like they did back in 94. I don't think they care. So are they positioning him to turn heel? I talked about this a little bit earlier. I really think it's the worst situation for Roman Reigns to be in right now, because unless they are turning him heel, or if Bryan is going over, and I don't think either one of those things are happening at Fastlane, you're putting him in there in a no-win situation. You're putting him in there with a guy that people love, who they want to cheer for, who they feel should have won the Royal Rumble, even though, again, in storyline, Daniel Bryan lost fair and square. They didn't give any wiggle room here. There is no debate. But they really put Roman Reigns in a bad spot here. I hope they have a plan. I hope there's a method to this madness. I hope they are going to turn him heel or do something with him, because if not, I just think they're really putting him in a bad spot. They're not doing him any favors. Daryl from Glasgow, Scotland. I was reading a Reddit by former WWE writer Alex Greenfield, where he claims one of WWE's biggest problems is Kevin Dunn. I don't know about you, but when I hear people complaining about the product, 99% of the time it's Triple H or Vince McMahon they'll blame. No one really says anything about Kevin Dunn. Oh, really? You must be new to this podcast. He says, if the guy is such a negative, misogynistic influence on WWE, and if it's true that Stephanie really does not like the guy, why haven't they gotten rid of him yet? Maybe the big problem Vince has is people like Dunn are trying to worm their way into his inner circle and will tell him whatever he wants to hear. If that's the case, surely Stephanie or Triple H should say something, no? It's not that he's worming his way into Vince's inner circle. He's already in Vince's inner circle. That's what you have to understand here. He is in Vince's ear all the time. And Kevin Dunn is literally in the ear of the announcers, the same way that Vince is. I mean, you saw it on Austin's podcast, right? Triple H is like, who's that? Who's in your ear? And Austin's like, oh, I got Kevin Dunn in my ear. So it's not just that he's in Vince's ear, in a matter of speaking. He's literally in the ear of the announcers. I mean, his influence on the product is felt all across the board. He's in. He's been in for years. He's not new to this company. The guy, you know, as talented a producer as he may be, is a cancer on that company. I've heard those same things about Triple H and Stephanie, that, you know, when Vince is gone, Dunn won't be gone long after because they want him out. You could already see it. You know, Triple H and Stephanie, like I said before, they want their own people in there. So it would make sense that they would want Dunn gone to get somebody fresh in there. As long as Vince is there, Dunn's going to be there. And that could be a while. You know, people have asked, why is Vince so loyal to the guy? Why is he so loyal to Kevin Dunn? It's because here's the backstory to this. Kevin Dunn's father worked for Vince Sr. as a producer back in the 70s. And as the story goes, once upon a time, Kevin Dunn's father saved a bunch of WWE tapes from being destroyed in a car fire. He was driving home from a TV taping one night. His car caught fire. He had the tapes in his trunk. And this guy, I mean, you talk about dedication. This guy somehow rescued the tapes, which, of course, the McMahons were grateful for. He did whatever he could do to save the tapes. To him, that was the most important thing. He risked his life to rescue a bunch of wrestling tapes. So later on, he had asked the McMahons to take care of his son, so they hired him. They hired Kevin Dunn's son. I want to say 83 or 84 was around then. And he's been there ever since. I mean, he has been there a long time. People don't realize how long he's been there for. Like, Howard Finkel has been there since the 70s. He was the first employee of, you know, Vince Jr. in WWE. Kevin Dunn's been there almost as long as Howard Finkel has. So he's got that job for life if he wants it, so long as Vince is the one in charge. It's not really Stephanie or Triple H's decision to make right now. Otherwise, I think they would make it, but they're not in a position to do so. Derek asks, do you think the WrestleMania 25 main event of Triple H Randy Orton was just a bad main event all by itself? Many have said the HBK Undertaker Classic killed the crowd, which ruined the main event. However, some may forget the world title triple threat match with Edge, Cena, and Big Show, and the Hall of Fame segment with Stone Cold Steve Austin went on after Shawn and Undertaker, and the fans weren't dead for either one of those, but all the energy died as soon as the main event started. I feel that having a straight-up wrestling match and not an all-out bloody no-holds-barred brawl with interference from Legacy and the McMahons to signify how personal the feud was is what made the match a disappointing main event and resulted in a dead crowd. Do you agree? Yeah, I mean, I think that had a lot to do with it, and also the fact that I just didn't think it was that good of a match. I think that was one of the worst WrestleMania main events they ever did. Not the worst, I still reserve that spot for John Cena and The Miz. But it was at the bottom of the barrel. Let's put it that way. It was closer to the bottom of my WrestleMania main events than it is towards the top. And again, I have not seen the match in many years. Perhaps if I go back now and watch it, maybe I'll be a little kinder to it. But I just remember not being into that match at all. I just thought it was boring. I didn't think there was anything overly appealing about it. I did not have any interest in seeing a Randy Orton Triple H WrestleMania main event. I just had no interest. And I think it was reflected in the apathy of the crowd. You know, I think it's a crutch to say that the only reason they didn't get a response is because of Shawn and The Undertaker. I do think that that took some of the energy out of the crowd. I do. I think there is some validity to it. I mean, we saw that as well at 18. Rock and Hogan, and then Triple H and Jericho paid the price for it. And I think that Triple H and Jericho had a better match at 18 than Triple H and Orton did at 25. I just didn't think it was a worthy main event for WrestleMania. But yeah, I mean, considering how personal they made that whole thing, right, with Triple H having to watch as Randy Orton essentially mouth-raped his wife as Triple H was handcuffed to the ropes. I mean, Randy Orton assaulted his wife, and then Triple H broke into this guy's house and threw him through the front window. You would think it would be a knockdown, drag-out, bloody affair, even though I guess blood was already banned at that point. And it would kind of make sense to have all these other people interfere and get involved. And it didn't have any of that. It was a straight-up wrestling match. There was nothing extreme or... There was nothing that match offered, I think, that you couldn't find in any other match on the card that year. And that's why it just didn't feel special. It just wasn't that good. So I would say they got the reaction they probably should have gotten. This comes from Adam. And then we'll end with this. Why did WWE include Shawn Michaels in the WrestleMania 20 main event? When Benoit came over to Raw, Triple H and HBK were feuding. Was HBK interjected as a way to add more star power to the match, or did WWE think Benoit vs. Triple H would not sell on its own? Or was it because the Royal Rumble world title match he had with Triple H ended in a draw? Also, did WWE ever have plans on using Eddie and Benoit as faces of the company, considering their ages and their sizes? I don't know the specific answer to your question, but my guess would be they had no other match planned for Shawn coming off that feud with Triple H, and they wanted to put, you know, A, they wanted to put him in a match that was in a high-profile position on the card, and B, add some star power to a match that maybe they didn't have faith in Benoit to carry it on his own. Maybe they didn't. And no, I don't think WWE ever had plans to make Benoit... or Eddie, especially Benoit, the face of the company, you know, both because of their age and their size. Same with Daniel Bryan, really. Much the way that Benoit dropped the title to Orton at SummerSlam, if you remember that year, he got a nice little six-month run for himself, and they took the title off of him. That was the plan for Daniel Bryan and Brock Lesnar last year. The idea is that it was not going to be John Cena getting his ass kicked against Brock Lesnar that way. The original plan was Daniel Bryan was going to go in there and just get waxed by Brock Lesnar and lose the championship to put over the next big guy. Kind of a similar circumstance there. Give him a token run and then just kind of move on. So, no, I don't think there were ever any plans of that at all. Lastly here, before we wrap up, we have this week's not-so-sad tweet. Can't really call it a sad tweet, but it's awesome, and I wanted to mention it here. There was a little bit of a Twitter war that erupted, in character, of course, between Lana and Carmella. Between the NXT diva Carmella. For those of you who don't watch NXT and don't know who she is with Colin Cassidy and Enzo Amore down there. So Lana tweeted at Carmella. It looks like she got things going here by tweeting at her, "Your music is unoriginal. I believe you stole it from Iggy Azalea, #fancy. Typical American, and your hair and nails look fake." And by the way, when I read this, I read that in a Russian accent, but I can't say it in a Russian accent. I can't do it justice. So that's what Lana said. And Carmella responded, and it wasn't as good as what Lana said. But then Lana responded, and she said, "I don't hate you, I laugh at you. My beautiful real bun..." Oh, that's right, because Carmella had mocked the bun that Lana has in her hair. And so Lana came back and said, "My beautiful real bun can't be ripped off unlike your ratchet weave. Nice try, loser. Lana is just awesome. What can I say? She's awesome. She's the best. And the best part about the whole thing, eventually this whole gimmick with Rusev is going to run its course, and then Lana's going to let that hair down. She's going to lose the accent, most likely, the same way that Kofi Kingston suddenly wasn't Jamaican anymore. He wasn't Jamaican me crazy, as Mike Adamley would say. And she's going to have a whole other career for herself as, like, the hottest babyface diva on the entire roster. I hope she's learning to work, because at some point they're probably going to want her to start working matches. I don't know how good she'll be at it, but maybe she's already working on it. Maybe they're already training her. But she's great now. She's going to be even better later on. Lana is the best. You can tweet me your own suggestions, by the way, for said tweet of the week. Let me know, at Solomonster, and I might use it on the show here. That is my Twitter handle. You can follow me on there. I'll be live blogging during Raw this Monday night and during the NXT special on Wednesday, so please follow me along on there. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. There is a lot of bonus content on that channel. Lots of sound-off extras, full review of the most recent Royal Rumble pay-per-view, books, DVDs. There's some sound-off inboxes where I answer nothing but your questions for over an hour. So if you are not already subscribed, please head over there, hit the subscribe button, so that way when new videos go up, you will be alerted about them. And you can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. There's actually a few different ways that you can support the Sound Off. That's the easiest way. You can also use our Audible URL, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Get yourself a free book. And you can buy a shirt in our store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. You can get the new No Distraction Roll-Up shirt. Of course, there's the name tag shirt that says, "Hi, I'm Shitty the Announcer." Nice little tribute there to Michael Cole. Or you can get the brand new Sound of New York shirt. I really love that shirt. I just think it looks awesome. So you can find all that stuff in our store right now, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. I will see you guys right back here for a brand new episode, 369, next weekend. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you for your continued support. Keep streaming us on Stitcher. And I will see you right back here again for a brand new Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
They give us the dreaded fuck finish. Lame, lame, lame. You want to do the finish where the guy gets DQ'd for kicking ass? How about not doing it with your Intercontinental Champion? How about that? Some of these matches will go 10, 12, 15 minutes only to get a fuck finish or no finish at all in the end. If WWE insists on fucking the fans over so many times, the least they can do is buy us dinner first.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.